Who's afraid of summer?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Goodbye, baby. 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman in. Steve is out today. He has Joe Romano disease.
No, he has.
There's no way. That was last week, if you're familiar. Super Joe was sick. Like in the way that...
Kryptonite, baby.
Yeah, he had to pull over on the Eisenhower.
Yeah, he was that sick, and then he came in on Thursday, but probably shouldn't have, but he was here.
Yeah, he had a fever and everything, right, Joe?
We all had big plans. Dave, I know, had big sports plans. I had plans this weekend. Everybody had something to do, so when Joe came in on Thursday, like, I'm okay, I'm here, we're all like, man, you touched me, I swear. Get away from me, Joe.
Yeah. So, but Steve had...
I'm not that way, Joe. You're always a friend.
My guy,
you're
Dave.
Always welcome.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Steve had allergies toward the end of the week last week that, of course, are not allergies.
Oh, man.
So he's got a
well, it doesn't help that I'm sure if Steve stepped one foot out last night. My wife went to see the, I guess we can say this, the Schitt's Creek show at the Chicago Theater. Mm-hmm. They had yesterday two shows.
Are you sure you shouldn't say SH asterisk asterisk asterisk?
Yeah, I know. Asterisk asterisk show. The popular show out of Canada, Eugene Levy and his son. They did a talk back last night at Chicago Theater. And my wife went to the 9 o'clock show. There were two, 7 and 9. And they made everybody wait out in line. And the temperature dropped, I think, from 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 9 o'clock by 20 degrees. Yeah.
Cow.
She got out of line and just went and waited in the Walgreens.
Why didn't she go watch the Oscars somewhere?
I know. Well, she missed the Oscars for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, it was like, but she said the line was all, like three blocks down because they were late to open the doors.
Sure.
Wow.
And everyone was just freezing because they left their coat in the car. Or maybe they were going into a theater and they left everybody out on State Street just like fend for yourself. And she said it was pretty nasty.
It's been a long time since I've been to a show where there's a first show and they have to let, like, those people were still coming out. That's why they couldn't let them in.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's how you die right there, waiting in line.
Wow.
That's how you get pneumonia and die right there.
That's how you die. So maybe Steve was waiting in line last night.
We have a lot of downed trees. I'm sure Dave probably by him.
Oh, yeah. Branches everywhere.
Branches and my grill covers again flying across the yard. I had to go retrieve them.
You got
to
use the Velcro, Dave.
That's a big issue in the house in the yard.
What happened the last time we had the high wind warning a few weeks ago?
You have to brick them down or something.
Duct tape, man.
Put some elastic on
them. No, they have Velcro on them, but you got to do it tight.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think they'd go anywhere.
I love that Mary's like, it's Dave's fault. It's your fault. The winds were so high.
Oh, it totally is my fault. I admit it.
Well, we had winds that were in excess of 60 miles per hour, and a severe thunderstorm warning is 58 miles per hour.
Gosh, I got that on the top.
Was anyone on a plane yesterday?
No, but I had a ton of friends leaving, and they got delayed.
Yeah.
My friend was going to Toronto, and it took 4 hours, including an hour on the tarmac on the plane. So that was all because of the high winds. So I'm sure everybody who had friends going out of New York, because we had the big Schadenfreude show this weekend, and everybody's yesterday was the getaway day. So everybody got delayed coming out of the airport. So always fun, right?
How was your Schadenfreude show?
It was great. It was great. As you can hear in my voice, it was great.
I know.
Yesterday I was like, hello.
We had a funny text exchange with you. You had a show Friday and Saturday night, and on Friday afternoon, Pete Zimmerman and I were chatting with you, and you said that you had been out after the show. There was a post-show festivity.
It was a very surreal night on Friday night that we, to give a quick idea, we did it at the Hideout. The Hideout's a great club right in the shadow of Lincoln Yards. So Lincoln Yards, if you've been hearing about in the news, the big development. So there's a big controversy swirling because they want to keep that place open. But when you're at it's like an old A-frame house.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're there, it's really in this industrial area. Everything else is gone. So they're ready to tear this place down. This is the, it's like it's, it looks like a almost like a beginning of a movie. We're like, well, that house on the prairie is still there, but there's just a lot around this place, but it's still pumping. There were two shows, so our show was sold out. There were probably 175 people there. There's 175 people waiting to get into the next show. And so what happened is the bar was totally packed. They couldn't get in. So everyone, of course, you just did a show, you're sweaty and tired and your voice is shot. And people are coming up to me going, what's the plan? What is the plan? This bar is
too packed. You're the producer. You're the producer.
Yeah, exactly. Every mom, grandma, cousin, friend from high school. What's the plan? What are you doing? What are we doing? So I had Mark Baser does his show there, and Mark had said that there is a on Chicago Avenue there was a taqueria that is kind of quiet, but they do karaoke there. And
in your sweet spot.
Yeah, it was written Ukrainian Village, and I'm like, you know what? That's the only thing I could think about because he had told me that, and I'd gone with him one time, and it was kind of surreal. It was really when I was there, it was only like five of us, and it was like tacos, and you're like, okay. So I told everyone, let's go there, let's go. So 50-75 people show up. They turn the karaoke on. It is straight up Spanish karaoke. Like, I mean, it is, and we're not talking, I've never done this before. We're talking the old ladies who have made a career out of this.
Okay.
They get up on stage, it's like just beautiful. And then everyone who got up there, the karaoke was top notch. I mean, at the top.
I don't often hear high ratings for karaoke performances. But
it's in the back of a really kind of suspect-looking taqueria on Chicago. And we stayed there way too late. And the next day, everybody reported that they were not feeling well.
And so, you know, 20 years ago when you were first doing this Schadenfreude shows, you could stay till late and wake up the next morning and have no effect.
This was the 20th anniversary, so I'm 44. So that was 24 when we started. So if you were 24 going to the taqueria karaoke, you'd be like, hey, what are we doing Saturday?
Yeah.
But now I'm like, I'm not going to make it. Not so easy.
Did it affect the show on Saturday night?
It did to an extent. The Saturday show was a secret show we did at Cards Against Humanity, which was just a black box doing all the same sketches we did in 1999. And the show that we did at the Hideout was a little new. And so it did in the sense that it was a different vibe to begin with. But the good news was that most of the audience that was there on Saturday was there at the taqueria on Friday. Okay. So they all felt it as well.
So, audience was also dragging.
Yeah, so everybody was like, all right, we're all together in this. So it was good. I had a great weekend. We'll talk about more of it.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling.
That's right.
60 Minute Men.
It's time for the top 666. Let's start with the Oscars. They're in the books. Big winners: Green Book for Best Picture, Rami Malek for Best Actor, Olivia Colman for Best Actress from The Favorite.
That was a surprise.
Yeah, we're going to talk all about it with Dean Richards coming up. I call it the year of the leg slit. That would be my fashion. A lot of that going on.
A lot of that. I was happy with the leg slit versus the low V cut thing with the tape.
The V's out. The tape is out.
There's also a lot
slit is in.
One shoulder, Mary.
With big bows.
Yeah. I love the bows.
I can't. I don't like them.
I love them. They remind me of the 80s.
And everybody this morning, yeah, including
the big shoulders.
They've got the CNN is on the TV, the monitors in front of us. I have seen Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga on stage four times already in the 15 minutes we've been in studio.
Yeah.
Well, so that's going to be the
best. That
was a
hot moment.
It was. Mm-hmm. Or Chris Evans helping Regina up the
King,
stairs. Yeah. That guy's a stud. Yeah. But
well, we're going to talk about the Oscars all morning long, so we'll move next. All right, so one more day before Chicago chooses not only a new mayor, but a new treasurer and a new city council. So one more day for an intern to put 25-yard signs on the median on Ashland. Give me a break. I don't understand how technology has not advanced in elections that yard signs are still the way to go.
Yeah.
There's no better tech. We haven't figured out holograms or anything that we have to put yard signs everywhere.
You know,
it's ridiculous.
My stepdaughter's in high school sports, and when you go to the meeting for each sport, the yard sign, like, they sell out at the first meeting. That's the hottest thing to get.
There are, if you go down, like, just say Ogden in Chicago, mm-hmm. there are every, I think there's a, there must be some sort of law because it's every foot there is a yard sign. And a lot of times it's the same, like Proko Joe, the alderman in the first ward. I was in Wicker Park or his area. Whoever's putting up signs for him is just like, well, I'm going to put it up everywhere, every single minute or a second of this person's commute, and I'm sure it won't make them annoyed. Like, it's every, it's just Proco Joe signs for 2 miles on Ogden. You're like, this is not a good, you're backfiring.
It's like Burma Shave.
it's kind of annoying. And now, this is city election officials are bracing us tomorrow for a too close to call election, meaning that there's so many mail-in votes and they think that it's only going to be hundreds of votes separating second, third, fourth place, that they will not know who is going to run off or who's going to win if nobody gets 50%.
You're doing
plus
an
one.
Evening election show.
I'm tomorrow,
correct?
Yeah. I'm the host
what
of the election.
What if you have no, like, what kind of show is it with no
well, I mean, there's
results?
A lot to talk about, Alderman, other stuff, but yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be, there'll probably be one, I'm not necessarily sure that it's going to be too close to call. It may be too close on some of the secondaries.
At some point, so. Now, will there be like 10 concession speeches, or how does that?
Yeah, they'll
all say something.
Yeah, some, and it'll be tough on the media because they usually take those.
Oh yeah, where can you go?
They usually take those, but I don't know if they're going to take all 14. We'll see.
You're going to get the deep anchors, you know, the ones you're like, wow, we never see her. Usually she's on, you know,
oh, she usually
Sunday
does,
morning or something.
Yeah, she usually does sports, but she's covering Gary Chico. That's great. Next. President Trump heads to Vietnam today for a second summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He also said he's going to postpone new rounds of tariffs against China.
Which is a topic we have to talk about later because you bought new jeans and you were convinced the tariffs have affected the pricing of your denim.
Never spent that much money at Kohl's in my life. Next. R. Kelly's still in jail. He was charged on Friday. Didn't post bail. His lawyers appealed the bond, saying the singer's finances were in disarray. He was charged with several counts of child pornography and abuse after four women came forward. And boy, dear goddess at the presser. Here he is, listen to this, fighting with Kelly attorney Steve Greenberg.
There are a number of interviews where the young lady says, I lied about how old I was. I lied to him about how old I was. And then recently said, oh no, I lied about lying about how old he was.
No, she showed him the ID, the fake ID, then showed him the real ID. Don't misquote a victim, Mr. Greenberg. Don't misquote a victim. That's not what she said. Well, she initially lied to him, then she showed him a state ID. She was here today. Did you see her in tears while the charges were read?
So you have a book coming out, and I hope you sell lots of books.
I don't give a f*** about selling a single book. I've talked to that woman, and I've talked to 47 others.
You know,
I'm not Mr. Abnati.
I've known Jim DeRogatis for a long time, and I edited him, and he really does. I can back him up. I can back him up that he does not care about his book.
No.
Meaning he loves the book, but or selling books, let me put it that way. This book is something that he's doing, but yeah, the lawyer obviously does not know Jim to say, you're just trying to sell a book. An 18-year book?
Yeah, and a book that, like, this work has, you know, he lost a marriage over this, DeRogatis. This work has consumed him. I always wonder when they can't post bail, because I think about this myself, like, my husband doesn't know my PIN number. Like, is his team, they don't know, like, the ATM number?
No, they suggested that he's, because he got dropped by the record label, that he doesn't have
he
the liquid.
Doesn't have cash. Okay.
He doesn't have the cash. But, I mean, it's $100,000 to get him out. That was the number.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many of us could snap a finger and get $100,000 to get you out of jail. So I know it's rich people problems, but
when they took
maybe
him in
not,
custody, was he wearing that blue puffy coat still?
Probably was. I missed all that because we're doing the shows, but
it
was
a blue puffy
but
coat.
But I caught the DeRogatis thing and pretty that's classic Jim. I mean, that's what he's going to do. It's amazing to me, and I saw a lot of stuff when I worked with Jim on this story, and he's right to worry because the lawyers and people on the R. Kelly side, they like to manipulate and try to call out the victims as liars. They've been doing it. That has been the pattern for the R. Kelly camp for years. So Jim was right to sort of call him out. So lots on that. I'm so sick of talking about this next story, the weather. But if February could get any worse, now wind. Last night, the winds got up to speeds of 60 miles per hour, blowing roofs off buildings, even overturning a couple semis. That's nightmare scenario. Whenever you see one of those big trucks kind of, they do a little waddling on the street, and you're like, whoa, some wind is really, can you imagine if you knocked it over?
We got one this morning on I-65.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then the temperature dropped into the teens
Dave's
last night.
Grill cover falling out of his yard.
Hey, but, just be glad you guys aren't in northern Wisconsin. My poor mother-in-law had a blizzard yesterday. She couldn't even see out the window.
Yeah,
she's like so tired of it.
And there's some more bad news on the way. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the first week or so of March will be unseasonably cold. I mean, at least 10 to 15 to 20 degrees below.
Temperatures in the teens beginning early next week, I think.
Great. Nice. Thanks, March. Steve. And finally, this one's for Dave Ennett. The Chicago Bears look like they're going to release kicker Cody Parker.
Yeah, first of all, who's surprised?
Yeah, right. At least, I guess we give him credit because it kind of had a vibe where they were talking about competition and like they were going to act like it never happened. He was going to show up kicking. And we're like, oh, it didn't happen last year.
I never got that impression. Yeah. I think this was a foregone conclusion when the league year begins in a couple of weeks here in March.
He's
that's
out.
When they will officially.
Dude's getting all of our all the money we spend, the $12 Miller Lights at Soldier Field. He's getting a chunk of it. Cody Parker has it, $3.5 million. So, well, good riddance.
Hope you enjoyed your Miller Light.
Hope you enjoyed it because it paid to get rid of Cody Parker. That's top six at six.
That's it.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now. Doc Morse.
720 WGN. This is Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman stepping up for Steve today. He is sick. He's probably already called Doc Most. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better healthcare starts here. Doc Most, today we talk something about what is considered to be, it's interesting to me because we never really think about it as a medical epidemic because it plays in so many different areas, but we're talking about workplace violence. This is something, of course, that we just saw play out in Aurora last week, but this is something that the medical community is very aware of and very concerned about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we see the whole spectrum of this, all the way from what can we do to prevent it, and what can we do to treat individuals who are injured at the workplace, and then what can we do to treat what we call the second victim. So the OSHA reportable injuries, in other words, injuries that you receive at work, are very wide and very, I mean, we have them all the time. But unfortunately, now we're seeing these outbursts of violence, which is showing us what's going on in the workplace can be deadly.
Yeah, but you never, it's so interesting, Doc, because I'm pretty aware and I read up on a bunch of stuff, but I would never put workplace violence up in the top five occupational hazards. It's just something that I think is always on the outside. It's on the outskirts of what other things that might be hurting people in the workplace.
It is, Justin, and that's the sad part about it, I think. If you look, Leo, in 2017, over 5,000 people died in the workplace. Wow. Now, a lot of those were due to auto accidents, construction injuries, falls. But, you know, unfortunately, once you get past some of those bigger ones, you're getting to this place of workplace violence where it's really being, it's very difficult. And it's hard because it's a place that you should feel safe. And we should make sure that you are in a safe environment when you go to work.
Now, it's the fourth leading cause of occupational injuries in the U.S., but it's the number one cause for the death of women in the workplace.
Yep. Which kind of really, it's unfortunate. You know, that's the one that kind of scares you and hits home. We try to, like I said, keep people safe. But when you look at the number one cause of women death in the workplace, it's not because of highway accidents. It's not because of falls. It's not because of being struck by an object. It's because of violence. And we saw that at Mercy Hospital. We've seen that in many different places, unfortunately.
Doc, is there any statistics on if the workplace violence is always an employee or a former employee, or like when you said at Mercy Hospital, that was a ex-fiance?
Domestic situation, yeah.
Yeah. That's the other thing, Mary. This is just like the tip of the iceberg, because when we talk about workplace violence, we're talking about individuals who are injured at the workplace where they were working. Unfortunately, a lot of other individuals have been injured as well. Customers, vendors, people who are just happen to be passing by when these workplace violence events occur. So although we know the numbers for those who are injured at work, it's actually just the tip of the iceberg, because there's more secondary injuries from other people who were there, either caught in crossfire, were there independently as a customer, or were in the workplace for some other reason.
Doctor, I always think about this, you know, when you think about if it's a measles outbreak, there'll be a lot of conversation about vaccines. If it's a, if it's any other sort of virus, there might be talk about prevention, wash your hands, things of that nature. When it comes to workplace violence, what are the suggestions from the medical community when it comes to prevention?
Yeah. When we look at, there's the whole big spectrum of that as well. I'll give you an example here. In the healthcare field, when we look at workplace injuries, what are we concerned about? We're concerned about back injuries and needle sticks. You know, those are the common things that we are going to see here. But what we're also trying to do now is teach employees about those extremes. You know, we talk to them about, you know, active shooter. We do active shooter training here in the hospital for all our employees so that they know what to do. That's the portion of it, is know what to do. And then the other portion of it that we need to really get across to people is how do we identify somebody before they get to a point of being violent in the workplace?
And how do you?
Yeah. You know what? If you remember how we've talked about people with depression and people that are suicidal, a lot of those things are what the things that we're going to look for. You know, that person who comes into work and is usually in a very happy mood and now all of a sudden seems to be withdrawn and seems to be a little angry. Those are the ones that you're concerned about, saying, wait a second, what's changed here with them? And then that starts something. You know, you start to see maybe an emotional injury that occurred. Might have been something that happened at home that has aggravated him, and now he's bringing that to the workplace. Those are the ones that are very concerning because we don't know what's going on at home. But from the medical profession, this is where we need people in the workplace to start to identify some of those things. Passive-aggressive actions, you know, something as simple as complaining to a coworker and then waiting for that coworker to either agree, yeah, you know, administration's terrible, or yes, they should have changed that a long time ago. Often that is throwing kerosene on the fire in the hope that it goes out. But I think people are often very uncomfortable standing up to someone who says something controversial. Right. It's easier to agree with them.
So where does this conversation go? And when we're talking about some of the solutions, does it have to be administered or led by the government, OSHA, and those kind of components? Or is it led by the medical community?
I think it's led by the... I personally think it's led by the companies themselves with the help of the medical community. You can only put, you know, metal detectors in so many different places. But look at what we've done now for safety going into sporting events and going into places where we're checking everybody because of this, which is unfortunate, but it's for the safety of you and safety of everyone else. So workplaces need to be aware of that as well. But the health field cannot go into every workplace and say, this is what we should do. So it's our point, the medical side should be going to companies and say, this is what we need to teach your people to look out for. And when they do that, tell the people in HR so that the people in HR can reach out to those individuals and bring in professionals to help them.
All of Doc Most's words and all of the prep that we have for this segment is posted online at WGNradio.com. It'll be up today. And Doc Most joins us every Monday to talk about these issues. Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it.
You got it. Take care, you guys.
There you go.
It's funny, you know, we had, when we moved into this building, we had the fire safety active shooter seminar that we had to sit through. And it's almost like we got too much information, you know, where what floor not to go to if there's a fire, and yeah, then right. Also how to act with an active shooter, and identifying, like, if you see on social media a coworker saying something violent and things like that, alerting, you know, yeah, like, hey, I saw this over the weekend and I feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I wonder too, I guess I'd ask everybody on the staff, just how much do you remember, how much did you retain from that one meeting we had, the 3 hour or 2 hour meeting?
Yeah, it was overwhelming. I remember that you could use your sock and keys as a weapon, or a can of pop in your sock. You know, like if you needed to fend
off. Whip the sock around. Yeah. And
I remember you can use the fire extinguisher to hit somebody in the head if you need to.
That was a good one. I thought of that. But I realized that I'm not safe in my little studio. There's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
That point, and that's all that we retain is socks and fire extinguishers, it borderlines into from, you know, serious conversation to SNL sketch.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, when you're like, and this thing in your hand, you can use this phone. phone. Use his phone to bash someone in the head. And you're like, what? Okay, what are we doing? Is this like a Dan Aykroyd bit?
Because what you're up against in reality will be a firearm that is firing repeatedly versus...
My stapler's not going to work. I figured that out.
Doc Mose brings up a good... I think the conversation has to begin that it's more of an epidemic, a medical epidemic, than just someone who is unhinged who you work with. So we'll... obviously continue that with Doc Most, and every Monday you can check him out, and those notes will be posted soon.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. River in blue jeans, babe.
And honey, sweet. 312-981-7200. Mary Sandberg is, I think, borderline obsessed with my pant wear. She got really mad at me on Friday because I had said I bought new jeans for the Schadenfreude show.
And that was on Thursday.
It was Thursday,
you weren't here on Friday. And you waited till 9:48 to tell us.
when Steve Cochran bought jeans, you went crazy.
I know. I've known him for 5 years. I'd never seen him in denim. And then he walks in wearing denim like he can just slide it in.
Dave, are you a denim guy? You wear a lot of jeans?
I'm wearing jeans today.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, Dave wears
jeans. I used to never wear jeans to work, ever.
I'm the same way, Dave. I always wore khakis all the time to work or some dress slacks, and now everybody wears jeans, so why not?
Well, one of our previous regimes back at the Tower, all of a sudden we'd gone from being kind of a suit and tie company to wearing jeans. And all the big bosses were wearing jeans all the time. I'm like, well, okay, if they're going to do it, then I'm at least going to do it occasionally.
Khakis, right?
Yeah.
And in your case, Justin, my obsession, it goes back a little further in that every year you ask for, your mother-in-law gives you a gift card, and you go buy jeans, but the 1 year you waited until December.
Way too long, right?
It took a while to find the gift card because you don't have a good system at home. And then he told me how he's like, I walk into Kohl's, I go to the table, I know I want the 531s or whatever.
It's code, it's Levi. Levi's got different numbers, number 500 numbers, right? So 527 is one that I know I've had success with, a 513. So I'll go right to the 527 table, I'll pull out the different colors, put them up there, and I say, this is the one. I don't try them on. I take them to the register. I am out of Kohl's in 5 minutes.
But then you were displeased with the ones you got in December that were from the previous Christmas because they
didn't fit right.
They didn't fit, but you don't try them on.
I know.
And so
always try jeans on. Yeah. Right, Mary?
Always.
This drives me nuts.
They're all made differently.
And they're all sized differently. Even if your size doesn't change, always try them on.
The last thing I want to do, and I speak for all guys out there, the last thing I want to do at Kohl's is be like, can I get a number to go into the dressing room to try these jeans on?
You don't get a number.
They give
Kohl's.
You sometimes a number of pieces. They'll say how many pieces, and they'll hang.
I don't want to go
in.
I don't want to spend more. Yeah. I'm not spending more time than I need to in the call. That's the whole point of the gift card. And my mother-in-law, God bless her, she gives me a certain number on the for the present, the Christmas present, like $35 from Kohl's because she knows I'm buying jeans. And so I roll in there at $35, and I'm like, boom, this is what I need. I need it. This is my jeans for the year. It's almost like it's a replenish.
Right. Because you and Pete discussed, that they're in a 2-year rotation, basically. You'll wear them for 2 years.
And they'll fade. They start real dark blue, but then they fade, and then they start to get that kind of 80s Cavaricci look, and you're like, nobody likes that anymore, so they got to go. And so you got to get new ones. And I went into Kohl's this week, and this is what I started to complain about.
You got your new gift card.
I got the new ones. I went early because I wanted to get these jeans for the show this weekend, and they jacked the price up on them. They were $48. Usually, but the way Kohl's works, everything acts like it was a lot more expensive and they're on sale now. But
because everybody has 30% off now or 20% or Kohl's cash. So if you don't have you're in big trouble.
So I was just annoyed because it was over my allotted $35 that I got. And I said to Mary, and she thought I was joking, but I don't think so. I feel like it has to do with, you know, we've been threatened and threatened and threatened with the tariffs and everything that's happened. And I know denim is a part of that. And at some point or another, they just jacked the price up on jeans and I wasn't paying attention.
He said he got into it with the cashier who did not care your tariff.
I said, why are these 48? They should be 35. She goes, they're usually 70. I'm like, there's never been once in the history of Kohl's where these jeans were $70. So cut the crap. Like, I was just like, don't tell me that the regular price is the regular price. I should be lucky for the 30% off. Everything in the store is 30% off.
Did you get a little feisty with them?
A little bit.
Well, that's why they upped the price a little bit, because you're supposed to have the 30%. Can I tell you where you should be going right now?
Where?
Oh, my gosh. Sears, of all places. Oh. I was there yesterday. They have so many fantastic deals, and you get all these points. I got a pair of shoes, and I paid $7 for them. And they were $49.99 originally.
Are you wearing them today, Mayor?
I don't have them on because of my toe issue. But anyway, this was... They have unbelievable... Because they're giving stuff away.
Is Sears do Levi's? Cause,
yes.
No, good. Because I feel like half the time
Lee's
you go in
Levi's,
there and you go...
I can't remember.
Oh, Lee's. Lee's are...
I'm pretty sure it was Levi's.
Lee's are not acceptable to the Kaufman.
And then they have their standard brand, Roebuck.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going in there.
Go. I like that.
I'll take a pass on the $12 Robux.
Well, I bought a great appliance there yesterday.
Do you still get a J.C. Higgins bike?
I don't know. They're not doing the bikes. They still got the Craftsman.
Every time I went into Sears, there was a Sears by my house when I was in my 20s on Lawrence. All they ever had was, everything was in disarray, and all they had left was some sort of vegetable cutter. You know, like in the, it's out of the box.
The mandolin,
it's
just, yeah, right.
You're like, oh, I think I'll take this. I think this is going to be $11. So they've been doing that for a while.
No, I tell you, good deals there now. So mattresses too.
Right. Justin bought the new jeans for the show, but then on Thursday he was wearing the new jeans, and he's like, I don't know if these are going to get broken in enough for my show tomorrow night.
When you do sketch comedy, and when you do sketch comedy, you're doing a bunch of different characters and different costumes. And you have to have a, if you go with a jean, you're in trouble because you can't play an alderman with jeans on, so you have to change your pants. And so you end up having more costume pieces. If you do a nice, neutral khaki, you can play a bunch of different characters without changing your pants. That's what I remembered. So I did the khaki this weekend to be able to throw different shirts on or different mustache on, so you wouldn't have to change the pants.
So why don't you take the jeans back to Kohl's?
Yeah, there you
get
go.
Get some khakis, right? I made a mistake.
I will say the reason why they're different sizes, because when I worked at Gap, we learned this. The machines that cut the jeans, they cut, it depends on the brand, but 20 pairs at a time. So the jeans, the denim that's on top are going to be smaller, but as the blades go down, they just naturally, the ones on bottom are bigger. So a size 6 is a size 6, but that's where the variation
are
comes
you
in.
A firm believer in the $100 jeans?
Like, yes.
Sand is ridiculous. Yeah, I've never been able to get into that, and I feel like I'm missing out. I feel like, yes, if I invested in a $100 jean, then I would be like, this could be a 3-year investment, a 5-year investment, but I just don't feel it. I feel they'll fade the same way the others do, and I'll be like, I'll be the sucker at the end of the day. That's how I see it.
I'm with you on that
one.
Yeah,
there you go. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
I got it. I'm patched in.
All right, let me hear it.
Now, from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
We're locked. Systems check out. Signal across the board. What's the frequency?
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, the Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman is in for Steve. That's me. Steve, I'm not in. I'm on the show every night. Day.
Step up. Yeah, you stepped up.
Through, yeah.
For those that don't know how the studio works, there's a shift in positions of seating when a host changed. So you slid over into Steve Cochran's spot, and then Dave Ennett slid over into your spot.
It's like a regular musical chair. It's like cakewalk.
Cakewalk, yeah.
It's like a square dance at a barn. That's what we're doing here. We got your morning commute this morning here in the 7 o'clock hour. Mary's got everything. Obviously, the winds look like they may be subsiding, which is good.
Yep, they are.
And we'll pay attention to all the roads and give you an update on the news as well, as we do every morning here in the Steve Cochran Show. This is a big day. This is the day before the election day in Chicago, the municipal election. A lot of people, the early voting numbers have been pretty big. Surprising to see this weekend a lot of people casting their vote early to avoid what you have to do on Tuesday. The polls that are coming out today, there's a poll out this morning that says that it is still too close to call. There truly is not a front runner, which is amazing to me at this point. Even because you would think just off of conversations we've had, maybe it's Daley, maybe it's Preckwinkle, maybe you could say it's Mendoza. But a new poll says that the supposed front runners are in a dead heat. That Daley, Preckwinkle, and Lori Lightfoot are all polling tied at 14%. And right behind them and within shooting distance, within 3%, is Susana Mendoza. That's amazing to me. Can you imagine? I can't think of an election in my lifetime where the day before polls are showing that three of the candidates are in a dead heat.
I don't know. Steve Grzanich would have to speak to early voting results in past elections. Do they? What is the count time on an early vote?
They don't. They don't tell you. It's not like a percentage yet. They won't do it until election night.
Oh, okay.
And say what it is. But this is just polling.
Yeah, and they can tell you how many people generally voted,
but they don't tell you who they voted for.
And yesterday, apparently, it was a strong day of early voting across the city. So, it also could speak to just how qualified people think that these top candidates are. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary.
I think it says a lot. Yeah. I think it says a lot that Lori Lightfoot has moved, at least in this poll that was released, and I'll get the name of the poll, but that she has moved as the go-to progressive candidate into a dead heat with the more powerful names in Illinois politics, whether it be Preckwinkle and Daley and Mendoza. I think that says a lot, and she may have picked up the mantle of the progressive candidate that at the beginning of this race, which was very interesting, everybody wanted.
Everybody wanted,
and it looks like they settled on Lori.
I believe you asked every candidate we had in if they're the progressive, other than Bill Daley.
Are you the progressive?
Yeah.
Mr. Daley, are you the progressive? I think I'm a progressive. Get that. Pete, you voted early?
I went yesterday, as a matter of fact, to early vote. And we went around 3-ish, I guess, and nobody was there. Not one person. I mean, either with election judges. And it's great because they walk in, it's like your birthday. They're so happy to see somebody.
Nice.
Oh my gosh, welcome. Here, you sit down here, fill this out, blah blah blah, take any of the machines. It was great.
Did you have any material planned? Did you give them anything back? Did you be like, hey, I was going with material ready to,
no,
to mix it up with the election?
I know, you
judges.
Always like working the bits out. I did, my wife went in a few minutes before me because I was just kind of straggling, as I normally do.
As you do.
She always
You're reading the bulletin board at the local Y. Oh, they have guitar classes.
A bunny in the yard outside he's trying to snap a photo of.
Can't you keep up? So she had gone in before me, and she sat. And, you know, and there was maybe like 12 machines, and she sat in one. And then I came in like, oh, welcome. Take anyone you want. And I went to the one right next to her, and they're like, what is this creep doing? Yeah. They didn't know that I'm the
guy. That's hilarious.
He's sitting right next to this girl.
See, you missed an opportunity for a bit right there.
Yeah.
Nobody else in there, and it's quiet, and you just peek your head up, and you go, they don't know you know Molly.
Right,
so you just go. You go. Who you got for alderman? Right. That's always that's a winner. Everyone laughs. They get serious and they laugh.
I don't like when they give you the option of which one to go to. It reminds me of in the bathroom when I can't decide which stall to use. Like I feel a lot of pressure. I want to be assigned. You know, I'm like, is my vote going to count more if I pick a different one? You know, there's.
And I will say it's a light ballot. It's it takes 2 minutes.
Oh yeah.
It's, you know, mayor,
no judges, right?
Clerk. Treasurer,
and
alderman. That's it.
And you only get to vote for one alderman, which is, I think we should vote for all 50. I think we should get, I a couple years back, I was producing an election night, and the host at the time got sick. And so they needed to get a new host for that night. And they brought someone else in, and I was a producer, and I had to bone up on all 50 wards.
Oh.
And it was almost like a flashcard thing, because the person had not been covering politics or whatever. And it was a municipal, I remember. So I was like, first ward, okay, that's going to be your Wicker Park. This is the idea. Second ward, and it stuck in my head to the point that today, for a podcast, we're doing that same thing with Heather Sharon and A.D. Quigg from The Daily Line. They're coming in, and we're doing every ward. First ward, what are the issues? Second ward. And it's amazing. Amazing how much I know just in first 10, I know exactly who the aldermen are. I know exactly the issues in those. I don't live in those wards, but I know them because it's stuck in your head about where those districts are. They've been redistricted here and there. But and then my friend Kate, who's in Schadenfreude, the last time she was here in January, this is an amazing story. She got a Lyft, an Uber to the airport. And you know who the driver was? Former first ward alderman Jesse Granato.
Oh.
Are you serious?
How about that, right? He's like, yeah, I used to be in politics. And she's like, well, we're doing a political show. And he's like, yeah, I used to be an alderman. She's like, what? And then a classic, when she dropped him off, or when he dropped off, he's like, they had a good conversation. She was leaving. He goes, you know, don't believe what they say about me on the internet. That's what he said on the way out. Because he had a bunch of scandal on him or something. But sure. But something like that, because yeah, she was
going to
Google
him. That's why he's got the side hustle going.
Yeah. Justin, I want to give you a heads up, too. You might see my name come up in the results tomorrow night.
Yeah.
A neighbor of mine texted me the receipt from his early voting. He wrote me in for alderman.
Oh, congratulations.
But he misspelled my last name. So,
it's not going to count.
So close, but so far away.
You know the machine's going to be like, there's no Z? Does not count.
Does not count.
If you write in an incorrect spelling, do they use common sense on that? Or
I don't think they do, right? I think there's a way that there has to be. They might do it where. No, I don't think they do. Yeah, I think it's got to be.
Since I'm largely an unknown, that they're where are they going to pull that?
Okay, the biggest question, though, Steve, is where's the election night party? You have to have a victory party.
I have not even planned that yet.
Can you schedule like the common room?
Pull something together. Maybe the Hyatt.
Yeah, you're going to have to get her now that you're on the ballot. Now that you've been voted for, you have to have a spread. Like, you have to have free chicken.
You have to get an open bar.
Open bar. Okay. You could do just wine and beer. But you have to put a party together.
I hate the wine and beer.
Cool. I can't wait till watching the news tomorrow, though, when they do the Uptown results. Like, with 11 votes in, we have one vote for Steve Grzanich.
Let's go to the Grzanich headquarters.
They'll mispronounce it. They're going to mispronounce it. You're right, Mary, because they didn't spell it right.
Exactly. Lourdes Duarte standing by at the Grzanich.
It looks like it's Grzanich.
Grzanich is electric. It's a great party here. People are dancing. The mood is down. Only one vote.
He ran out.
The spread is nice.
All the food is cooked in from the Tivoli oven or whatever.
The Tivoli oven.
Oh, that's great.
It is a suburbanite. Aren't you guys bummed we can't vote?
I am. I feel
I'm so
out,
bummed.
Mary.
I mean, we're so well educated with this one after all the candidates have been in here. And
it's
like,
a fun election, too.
Exactly.
Chicago elections are a lot.
I'm good with it.
All right. Coming up, the most valuable person on the planet.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
You can watch WGN TV, but you could do it like a Bears game where you turn the sound down. Listen to us on WGN Radio doing the. I don't know if it syncs up that way.
Can you sync it up? Yeah, because it'd be a shame if you're talking and I don't know what Joe Donlin's voice is moving at the same time.
Maybe it doesn't work.
Yeah, you're right, Dave.
312-981-7200. It's time for the most valuable person on the planet. I saw this story this weekend, and I'm sure you did too as it went viral. A great message written in the snow at Maggie Daly Park. And you wondered about who would have the, I would be able to do that possibly with, was thinking about how many, how would you do that with your hands and your fingers when you write things in the snow, from someone to be able to see something from one of the tall skyscrapers in our area or around Maggie Daly Park. But we'll find out how it was done.
And how long it took.
On the line with us, Bob Lempa and his fiance Peggy Baker. Peggy, Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Warning.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Woo-hoo. And I don't want to give away the story. I'll let you give it away. But Bob, you wrote something in the snow at Maggie Daly Park. Take us through that.
Well, I'd been researching this for months. I mean, it wasn't something I worked on full time, but actually I think I got the seed for it late last winter. And I just started investigating. How could I do something in the snow? Peggy's on the 37th floor. It had to be big to be seen. So I researched this. You know, I was able to get photos from that floor. Just checked things in the park. Went through Maggie Daly Park a number of times. Got aerial views of the park online. Just looked, studied, contemplated. Came up with a plan. Basically, I had to have letters I figured were about 45 feet tall, 31 feet wide.
45 feet?
Yes, I did not. Did not use my fingers and hands. I used shovels, rakes.
Good. That's what I figured.
Tape measures, string lines to keep things straight. Wow. And I researched just the proportions of the letter, height to width to spacing, everything that, you know, just needed to be in there so that they weren't, you know, they were legible.
Okay, Bob. So here's my question, I guess, as we reveal. What were the words?
Oh, marry me.
There you go. So, Peggy, let's bring you into this conversation. This was an undertaking by Bob, because it's just hearing that and thinking about the research that went into it, it automatically makes me feel worse about when I did my proposal. But for you, Peggy, tell us about how it came to be that you saw it.
Well, most of the day I was working away, had the shade pulled down. I had no idea what was going on outside, that Bob was out there working and shoveling so hard. Later in the day, some of my coworkers were out looking out the window. So we went to the window and looked outside, and it was in progress at that point. And we were speculating what it might be, but I never thought it would be for me.
Oh,
so I just went back to work. And Bob called me later and said, "Did you get my card?" And for Valentine's Day, he told me he was still working on my card. So I hadn't received my card yet.
Oh.
And then he says, "He'll call me back." And then he calls me back a little bit later and says, "Did you get my card?" And I'm at work. I'm wondering, no, I haven't received anything. But you never know. It could come on email or something. So then I said no. And then he said, "Look out your window." And then I looked out and I saw the message and I knew it was for me.
Wow. That's amazing. How did you respond? Did you just look around to tell all your coworkers, or what was the response to a proposal from 37 stories away?
I was talking with Bob, and of course I said yes. And then my coworkers started getting an inkling what was going on and that it was for me. And soon they rushed up and gave me hugs and congratulations. And a good coworker said, "What are you doing here? Go downstairs."
That's what I was wondering, if you went downstairs or if Bob came up to you.
No, I went downstairs, and a lot of coworkers clapped and cheered, and so went downstairs, met Bob, made it official, told him yes. The park district was there wanting to meet me and take our picture.
That was my question for you, Bob, just to, you know, because this is Maggie Daly Park, and yes, you can, you're public, you can be in the park, but did you have to coordinate with the park district with this project to let them know
permitting.
that you'd be riding in the snow?
Well, not ahead of time. I just kind of went there and started it, and I was kind of geared up that I might run into some, let's just say, complications with them, but they kind of checked me out early and just started to, you know, talking very friendly, even from like 20, 30 feet away. And I just said, "Well, I'm going to write a message in the snow." And he goes, "Oh, okay, great." And I said, "It's going to be a wedding proposal." And then he, "Oh, yeah, great, even greater." And he said, "Anything you need, let me know. I'll be glad to help." And he was serious. And I think because it was a personal message, you know, it's people, yeah, park is for people. I was basically just, I had a shovel, a rake, and a bag of tricks and drinks, you know, just some, you know, water and things, juices.
Yeah.
I think they were, you know, supportive. They, you know, realized this wasn't going to be political or promotional or anything like that.
If you're writing a website, protest, they might have a problem with it, right?
Now, Bob.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Bob,
yes.
We've had a few snows this winter. Were you waiting for the right weight of snow to clear? You know, because when we had all that snow earlier this year, it would have been more work for you.
Possibly. I wouldn't say I was waiting for the wait, but I was just, I had to be ready, and I think I was finally ready about a week before this, as ready as I could get. I wanted to do it on Valentine's Day, but there was no snow in Maggie Daly Park. Peggy and I were actually heading downtown, I believe, Valentine's Day morning together, because I had some things to do, and I dropped her off at work. And on the way, I said, "How's the snow in the area?" And she goes, "Oh, we don't have any snow down there. We got much less than we did up north where we live." And I was like, "What? No snow?" And I just realized I was pretty emotional about that, so I had to tone it down and just not say anything more. But I was just thinking they had the same amount. Maggie Daly Park and Lakefront downtown had the same amount of snow we did up in the northern suburbs.
Yeah.
And no, that was not the case. There was no snow. So
well,
I had to, last minute, put it off.
Everybody here at WGN on the Steve Cochran Show says congratulations. What a great proposal, and a public one that has gone viral. Bob Lempa and his fiance Peggy Baker talking about the snow carving proposal. I guess that's what you call it. The Marry Me in Maggie Daly Park that was received 37 stories up. Thanks, you guys. You are the most valuable people on the planet, and we appreciate you sharing your story with us this morning.
Well, thank you for having
us. Thanks so much.
There you go. How fun is that?
It's adorable.
I wanted to ask him a little bit, like, did he spray paint a little to mark it off? Because you ever, like, start, you've done a poster board before where you didn't leave yourself enough space, like, that he knew.
It's the John Mulaney bit when you're doing the happy birthday sign. Big H! I mean, oh, no, the H is too big. Small, skinny Y.
Right.
But, yeah, it's tremendous, and that story's online. It's gone viral. You can see the Mary Me from the aerial shot. So congrats to Bob and to Peggy. All right, we're going to take a break real quick, do the news. Ryan Noble's coming up on CNN here on 720 WGN.
If Singapore was about symbolism, then Hanoi needs to be about results. And we are getting a hint from South Korea's Blue House that one of the things that may be announced here later this week, perhaps an agreement between the U.S. and North Korea to formally end the Korean War. That would certainly be a significant and historic step towards normalizing diplomatic ties between the U.S. and North Korea, which is one condition that the North Koreans have given to help them, in their words, build trust with the United States, build confidence, if you will, and perhaps the U.S. could then convince them to start getting rid of their nuclear weapons, which, of course, is the ultimate goal. That has not happened in any capacity since Singapore, even though U.S. intelligence has indicated that North Korea hasn't tested anything, yet their capacity remains pretty much unchanged. And in fact, some of the United States question whether Kim is actually prepared to ever completely denuclearize.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
That was Will Ripley from CNN. Joining us online from CNN, Ryan Nobles. Talk a little bit about the big trip to Vietnam for the second summit of the denuclearization, hopefully a nuclear summit of North Korea. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Justin, I'm so bummed that Steve's not in today because I actually have some big news for you guys.
Oh, what do you got?
I am going to be in Chicago next Monday morning.
What? Great, you got to come by. Mary just had a look on her face. Her eyes went bright, and then we're like, we started to do the math in our head about how we're going to get Ryan into our studio.
Yeah, so I'm coming next Sunday. For Bernie Sanders is going to have his a big rally in Chicago Sunday night, so I'll be there Monday morning.
Awesome.
And if you guys will have me, I'll try and pop over to the station and join you guys.
Yes. Oh, yes! That is awesome.
That's awesome.
Well, that is exciting, and Steve will be here for that.
Yes, he will be there. That's perfect.
I was waiting for when Ryan made the announcement. He tells me often, I'm on the way to the Carolinas, I'll be in Florida. You know, he's always, so I didn't know if he was going to say family trip, so he wasn't going to be on with us. I didn't know what he was going to say. That's why
our producer mind started flowing.
I would have told you that via text, Mary.
Right, he's messing up my schedule already on the air.
Well, Ryan, let's talk about some trips today. The president is heading to Vietnam this morning or mid-morning for the big summit. It's a lot, he's tweeting out about if North Korea denuclearizes, they could become an economic powerhouse. He seems to be very confident going into the summit.
He seems confident, Justin, but if you listen to what he said last night in the speech that he gave to the nation's governors, he does really seem to be dialing back the expectations of what exactly he hopes to accomplish when he talks to Kim Jong-un. You know, you remember after the first summit, he declared that North Korea was no longer a nuclear threat. And then, you know, Sunday morning on CNN, Mike Pompeo really and what he said last night was that his goal is he just wants him to stop testing. Well, that's, you know, a long mile away from denuclearization, which was the original goal of this summit. So, you know, I think the big thing for President Trump, the challenge that he has in this particular instance, is that last time around he was going to win points regardless because this was a historic moment. The two of men shaking hands, kind of the thawing of the icy relationship between the two countries, all that's in the rearview mirror now. This time around, there's got to be some sort of tangible deliverables that come out of this meeting, and, you know, ones that benefit both sides, and then also ones that don't inflame the concerns of the adversaries in that region like China and Russia. So it's a tall order. And, you know, not exactly sure how the president's going to accomplish that.
Well, not only that, the adversaries, but there's a lot of question about the allies as well. South Korea plays a big role in this. But, the president speaking on behalf of United States interests and really the Western world has to take that into consideration, that it's not just about us, but it's about the neighbors, our allies that neighbor North Korea.
Yeah, I mean,
Do we lose him now?
You know, there's North Korea. Seoul is one of the biggest cities in the world, completely vulnerable to an attack from North Korea. You know, their president has been very open to normalizing relations with North Korea. So they've been encouraging President Trump to take this step. You know, this is of North and the role that they play, in, not just in the Asia-Pacific region, but around the world, is really, really incredible. So there's a lot more at stake here than just the safety of the United States. There's an economic angle to this. There's a trade issue that's involved with it as well. There's the role of, and then there's also kind of the companion question about how the United States treats dictators and totalitarian leaders, because right. on one end, you've got President Trump cozying up and saying that he's got a warm relationship with Kim Jong-un, while at the other hand saying that Maduro in Venezuela needs to go. So they both have similar track records, but one is friendly to President Trump, so he seems to be treating him differently.
You know, Ryan, the other issue, too, is just when it comes to the bringing capitalism to North Korea, and that seems to be the chip or the fruit that's being dangled, if you will, from the president. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of question about whether or not North Korea could have any success with that, because their infrastructure is incomplete, their resources are limited, that just dangling the idea of bringing big American companies to North Korea, it may not mean anything to this country.
Yeah, and that seems to be one of the things the president seems to hit on over and over again. He talked last night about how he knows a lot about location, and North Korea's location is important. And I do think that's true. You know, it's near China, it's near Japan, not far from Russia. So from that perspective, it is definitely strategic. But in terms of its infrastructure, is among the worst in the world. You know, they regularly deal with electric brownouts. You know, if you ever see a satellite image of the world, North Korea literally looks like a black hole. And not to mention the fact that there aren't natural investors might be willing to tap into, and they don't have rich oil reserves or minerals or things along those lines that would make someone rush to try and invest in North Korea. But it's an untapped market, just in the fact that there just isn't a lot of commerce there. So from that perspective, perhaps you can make an argument. And I think, you know, one of the arguments of President, compare North Korea's situation to what Vietnam was like shortly after the Vietnam War.
Right.
And it's interesting that they're having this summit in Vietnam, because that is an example of an Asian country that at one point was in awful straits and is now experiencing an economic boom. I mean, Will Ripley, who you played with going in from CNN, you should check out his Instagram feed, and he's got an interesting look into just how Vietnam has turned itself around economically. So perhaps that's the argument the president is making. That maybe North Korea can have the same kind of turnaround.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously we'll be paying close attention to this story. We're also going to pay close attention to the declaration, the emergency declaration, and the vote in Congress. There's much to do, but we're going to get to all of that on Monday when Ryan Nobles is in studio in his visit to Chicago after the Bernie Sanders rally on Sunday night. Ryan, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, man. See you Monday.
Thanks, guys. Can't wait to see you in person next week.
That's great. That's so fun. Yeah, I you know, we got to move on, but I feel like that there's a more to talk to him about on the national stage, especially when we start talking about the emergency declaration. I don't know if you saw this, Mary, that Adam Kinzinger, remember, he was deployed.
Yeah.
He has changed his tune. He had said at the beginning he was a little bit more reticent about using the national emergency declaration. He has come back from that deployment and said what he saw. He supports the president and the declaration. And I think that that's telling, and I'm sure he'll be on with Roe and other places. But the point being that, you know, there is this disconnect between what the American people know about the border and what's actually happening there. And so if a congressman is there deployed as an American soldier, not as a politician, and he's coming back changing his mind, I wonder if that's worth investigating.
He is also a Republican congressman and has voted with the president 90% of the time.
No, I understand, but he's also been a vocal critic. I know, as an Illinois Republican, he goes on Roe, and he is not a step in line.
But he always ends up
in line
voting with Trump on everything.
I understand. I get that, no. But most Republicans in Congress have done that for the last 2-3 years. But yeah, I mean, but he's been vocal in his public displeasure with the president at different times, including this issue. So you're absolutely right, Steve. I mean, there's a difference between talk to talk and walk the walk, but very interesting to see his comments on the way back. So anyway, we'll continue that conversation and more.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Coming up, Dean Richards. We're going to talk Oscars, of course. Did you watch the whole thing last night?
I watched the entire broadcast.
There wasn't a point when you walked away, like maybe during animated short? Get some more chips.
I watched animated short. I watched the short documentary, period, end of sentence, which are special guests.
That was hilarious.
Abby Malban was so proud of. So an Oscar going to for women's menstruation is pretty cool.
That's very cool.
The Pete will attest, there was early on, there was a string of presenters and people who had won. And you know, it was maybe a good 15, 20 minutes that it was all people that had been on the download.
Oh, like, I know.
Boom, 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 boom. And I was like, that's so cool. These are all the guests in a row that we have interviewed long form on the show. So I was like, I thought that was really cool.
I did know that as well. I was like, wow, Justin talked to this guy. Justin talked to this person.
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive.
And I was bummed that Bing Liu, who's the documentarian who did the Minding the Gap, skateboard movie out of Rockford, which we loved, and he was on the show here with Steve.
Awesome.
He did not win. He was nominated, but he did not win. So, and did you see Dave, I know you're a shoulder strap kind of guy, but did you like the leg slit?
Dave likes cold shoulders.
Cold shoulders.
Yeah. He likes the cutout for the shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah, I did notice that now that you mentioned
there was a lot. There were a lot of moments where I'm like, all right, that person has to get upstairs with the leg slit. And I'm like, I don't need to be flashed at this moment.
That's why Chris Evans had to help
Regina. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and, of course, Dean Richards on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey.
720 WGN, Dean Richards. So exciting to talk all Oscars this morning. Dean, did you stay up late?
Is Steve still at the Oscars?
He's still there, yeah.
I know he was going to be driving Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper around.
I thought about Steve so much during that performance last night, because I'm like, Steve must be loving this.
Oh, yeah, belting it out from his couch.
He loves that song.
If you, Dean, if you go to Steve Cochran's Instagram or the Steve Cochran Show Facebook page, you can see the picture of Steve from the Oscars in 1995.
It's a good look.
Does he have a mullet?
He does have a mullet, and he's got a tux on.
I don't know if I'd call that a mullet. Dean, I'm going to text it to you right now.
I'm guessing. I haven't seen the picture yet, but I'm guessing he looks like Benjamin Franklin.
He's got a Benjamin Franklin kind of style mullet.
Yeah, well, he had some hair on the top, though.
Yeah, it's not quite a mullet. Yeah. It's more of a bowl cut.
Yeah.
Either way, sounds pretty darn attractive.
He looked very happy to be there,
though. He does look very happy.
Yeah, pretty much the same way I looked back then, so I can't really criticize him too much.
Dean, last night was a tremendous broadcast. There was a lot going into whether or not there was a host, and it seemed like it was fine without a host.
Did we like the no host?
I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
It moved fast. I liked it.
It moved along quickly. A lot of unnecessary junk was gone that didn't need to be there. Just enough comedy. I loved Queen opening the show. Really enjoyed that.
I tell you, know who had the best job of the whole thing? The voiceover announcer. The presenter lady. She did more work last night than anybody, because that's all she had to keep bringing people on the stage.
Right.
I think you recognize quickly.
I want that job.
Yeah, you recognize quickly as a viewer that you are attracted to the presenters, not as much the host. So when they would announce a presenter coming out of a commercial break, you're like, yeah, I'm glued to the TV because I want to see how funny or how this person looks or whatever it is. But that's the meat of an Oscar telecast.
I think there was such a curiosity factor last night also of, like, how are they going to do this without a host? A lot of people don't remember decades ago, when they did do it. And believe me, it was nothing like this. It was a train wreck when they did it many years ago. But I thought the pacing was great. They got done in just a little over 3 hours instead of close to four like it usually goes.
Right.
I was happy with all the winners. I was very happy the Green Book won, mostly because I predicted it.
Right. So.
That's great.
Julia Roberts at the end was kind of funny because it's like, yeah. Well, I guess that's the end of the Oscars.
Dean, I love the fact that they're really, this morning I was anecdotally just trying to think about who the big winners were. And it seemed like the Oscars almost went out of their way to let everybody win. There wasn't necessarily, there were some movies that got shut out. I don't think Vice did as good as people thought they could have. But it seemed like they, especially with the major awards, that they handed them out across the board.
Well, you know, it was interesting. Roma and The Favorite went in with the most nominations, 10 nominations apiece. Roma came out with only 3, and I think everybody thought that Roma was going to sweep the Oscars. I never thought that that was going to happen. It's, you know, it's an art film, and there is a place for it. I mean, one cinematography, one Best Director for Alfonso Cuarón, deservedly so. It won Best Foreign Film, deservedly so. The Favorite only won one award for Olivia Colman as Best Actress. But, man, that was a doozy because that was really, that may be the headline this year's Oscars, that Glenn Close did not win. Everybody predicted that Glenn Close was going, not everybody, most everybody was predicting that Glenn Close was going to win. So it was a real shock when she didn't. Olivia Colman was great, turned in an amazing performance, but I think that was the big shock of the night. Not a surprise that Mahershala Ali won Best Supporting Actress. He is now, next to Denzel Washington, the only other African-American actor who has won multiple Oscars. Wow. He's won 2 now for
Moonlight,
Moonlighting, right? and now for this. Regina King, very sweet, beautiful acceptance speech with her mom by her side, winning Best Supporting Actress. So I thought that was great.
On a side note, her dress was my favorite. White is my favorite color. She looked incredible. Great.
Beautiful. She was absolutely beautiful. What was the worst dress of the night to you guys?
Well, I know it was to be funny, but when the Melissa McCarthy gave out the costume,
she had the
rabbit puppet.
Brilliant.
Or yeah, squirrel, whatever it was.
And I know Melissa McCarthy. I know Melissa McCarthy will get all the headlines for her act, which was great. But the other guy too was outstanding. Yeah. In that comedy pairing, just when he kept flipping the hair off of his face while she was talking, I thought it was great.
Now, really, what I think we're going to remember this Academy Awards for were the performances. Number one, Queen opening the show, Adam Lambert and the Queen opening the show, instead of a traditional monologue, which was fantastic. My only criticism is that Queen set should have been longer.
Yeah.
It came and went pretty quickly, but we do have a little audio in case anybody missed it last night. I don't think I've ever seen the Academy Award audience as enthusiastic as they were during that. I mean, the crowd clearly loved it.
Now, Dean, did you know that was going to start the show?
I suspected it was. I could never get any confirmation from anybody.
Because I was watching on delay, and so I had hit play, and I went to the kitchen to get my Greek salad, because I thought there would be some, like, you know, they're like, and welcome to the Academy Awards, and then I hear, boom, the Queen is playing, and I had a run to the game. Like, I can't miss this. You know, I didn't know it was going to start right out of the gate with a big
Right,
yeah,
right. Came right out of the gate. And then they went to the welcome to the 91st Academy Awards. So that was one performance that I thought was amazing. The other performance that we are going to be talking about in Oscar history forever is this steamy, chemistry-filled performance. That's a very sterile way of saying those two were so hot together. Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, take a listen. At this point, now Bradley Cooper moves over from the front of the piano to over to the piano bench where Gaga is. They're sitting on the piano bench together.
Yeah.
The camera zooms in, and they are forehead on forehead.
All I just kept thinking, I hope they both had mints. I mean, they were right on top of me.
All I thought was, they're going to kiss.
Well, that would have been amazing. I have to say, you have to give a supporting actor nod to the cinematography of that shoot.
Yes.
Just because they could have done that from a two-camera shot, and I don't think it would have had the intimacy. The choice to shoot it from behind with the audience in front and so close to the singers made that a moment to never forget.
That close-up. When he came to the piano bench and the camera just slowly zoomed in on him until it was just face. All it was was face.
Beautiful.
That was so steamy.
And he was so cute when he sat down. He did a little tug of his trousers, and then he like slid next to her dress. I watched it a few times. So he was like such a gentleman about, you know, because she had a big dress on sliding up to the piano.
Was his girlfriend there?
Yes, yep. She was right next to him.
Oh, okay.
And his mom.
It's almost like Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga are actors. They were more than performers.
Don't throw cold water on this romance fantasy that I have going on, because she's just broken up with her fiance. Yep. Now he was there with his girlfriend and mother of his daughter, by the way, and his mom. But as somebody pointed out on my social media, that was the longest and most uncomfortable drive home ever in a car for Bradley Cooper and his girlfriend after that. Because that's all anybody is talking about. Those two clearly have so much chemistry. I don't think there's anything romantic
going on between them.
But, boy, they just really clearly like and respect each other.
Dean Richards, more on entertainment. More right after we take a break here on what happened last night at the Oscars.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9.
Dean Richards, more on entertainment, joins us after the Oscars. Talk all things Oscars. Spike Lee, very interesting, Dean, to me, because you know he in his acceptance speech for winning for BlacKkKlansman for script, I believe he seemed to be very uncomfortable, and the first time I've ever seen Spike Lee nervous in the way that his papers were shaking and he had something to say. It's not the Spike Lee we're used to.
No, he won his first Oscar, Best Adapted Screenplay, which was very nice for him. But when you saw him on stage, fumbling around with his notes, and it's amazing to me, these people. I mean, they have known that they're nominated. Don't you rehearse a speech?
Right.
Don't you plan a little bit? Don't you, you know, the insiders tell me that he was scribbling down some notes backstage, right before his category was announced.
I mean, it was on legal paper. Like, it was
yellow legal pad.
Yeah, it wasn't even, like an index card or like a, trying to make it organized. And there were even worse speeches than that. Some people that, it's as if they did not know that they might have to go on stage and make a speech that was very awkward.
There were some brutal moments.
One lady off her phone.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so rude. I just bringing your phone up, taking
it was a good speech too.
It was a really good speech.
But you're on a phone.
Read it off your phone.
And there was three people that they did a sweet job trying to give everyone a chance to talk, but they couldn't read the names on the paper. And I thought,
the woman in the center was directing the other two.
And then the music starts, and the Academy looks like they're being rude to people, not letting them speak. But these people are, they know how much time they have. They know that they need to be prepared. These are people that make movies. These are people who, are supposed to know how to put a show on.
Yeah, right.
Well, Dean, though? Like, the one day that Justin had a fill-in for Dave Ennett, and he's been waiting to do a sports report all this time, and then he was like, I'm going to go 45 seconds, and he went 90 seconds because, he got nervous and couldn't go 45. Like, that's what I think happens to people.
It's tricky. If you write, if you prepare a speech and you read it out loud at home, and you practice, and you go, this is 5 minutes. This is not 90 seconds, like it's supposed to. That's how it's supposed to go.
Right.
But the Spike Lee fumbling around with his notes in part of that speech, Spike Lee talked about mobilizing in 2020, which was one of the very few political moments of the night. But President Trump this morning tweeted, "Too bad Spike can't read from his notes when he's making racist comments about his president."
Oh,
so,
Jesus.
So the president has reacted to Spike Lee.
Of course he has.
It was unfortunate that he was having trouble delivering that, because the part about his grandma is so... I will never get tired of hearing somebody's story where your grandma saved her checks to put you through. Like, it's an incredible story.
Yeah, those are
nice
stories.
But you almost couldn't hear it because he was shaking the paper and going so... breathy about it.
Yeah, and you rarely get that, like a nice warm fuzzy moment with right. Spike Lee.
Yeah.
What was even also noticeable from Spike Lee was backstage. You know, after they win their award, they go backstage and they answer questions sort of press conference style with people. And somebody had asked him about losing the Best Picture award to Green Book. And there is a certain irony that Spike Lee lost Best Picture to Green Book, a movie about a white man driving an African-American person, when in 1989 he lost to the movie Driving Miss Daisy, where there was an African-American man driving around a white lady. And this is what he said about that.
I'm snake bit. I mean, every time somebody's driving somebody, I lose. But they changed the seated arrangement. Good.
I just wanted to ask you, we saw a little bit of a reaction to the Green Book win. Can you give us your thoughts on that Best Picture win?
Let me take another sip. Next question.
We're going to come down here.
Wait a minute. What reaction did you see? What did I do? No, I thought it was court side of the garden. The ref made a bad call.
So he was not even trying to be gracious about it whatsoever. And the reaction that the reporter was referring to was Spike in the auditorium waving his arms around angrily. This is how it was described. And trying to leave before the show was over. So it's kind of, you know, kind of a little bit sour grapes there. I get it.
It seems to be half, obviously it's real, but it's half bit, half drunk, Spike Lee.
Right, when he said, let me take another sip, he was drinking champagne that whole time.
Yeah, and he had said somewhere in that discourse that he had 6 glasses of champagne or something like that.
Champagne makes award shows so much more easier to take.
Well, the only other thing before I let you go here, Dean, is just the dresses and the ensemble that was put together by Aldi. I thought it was a great fashion experience. There was some out of the box stuff that was done. I think Billy Porter was wearing a dress. There was some great different thing. The year the leg slit, but it seemed like it was a good fashion year.
I guess so. I know nothing about fashion. I saw Billy Porter, who was he was here in Chicago when Kinky Boots did its pre-Broadway run here. He was one of the stars of Kinky Boots, an amazingly talented actor, and he was one of the red carpet hosts on the red carpet. But his outfit was sort of like almost like a Victorian tuxedo, except with a hoop skirt.
I loved it.
It was good. Like Charles Dickens meets Gone with the Wind.
I love big skirts. And I don't know if you have this on tape, Dean, for you to go back and look, but when Lady Gaga lost for Best Actress, her sister's gratuitous clap, because her sister is sitting next to her, you know, her sister just lost, and her clap for, what is the woman that won?
Olivia Colman.
It was very sister supportive, like, my sister should be up there. She was very dismissive of the winner.
Girl. There you go.
Yeah, I had a girl. I fully encourage them when you lose, you should show your true emotions and not like the fake.
I agree.
Oh, that's all right. I didn't mind. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Just like a bad call at the Garden.
Right. It's like a bad call? Yeah.
That's right.
Ref made a bad call.
Ref made a bad call. Dean Richards all morning long on WGN-TV talking about post-Oscars. Dean, thanks, buddy.
See you tomorrow.
There he goes, Dean Richards. Yeah, he's just all over the news this morning, so keep that going. We'll talk more Oscars. 312-981-7200. Do you think it was the year of the leg slit? Feels like it was. Let me know what you thought of the
I think it's just a slit. It's not a leg slit.
I like leg slit.
That doesn't seem like the right term.
I'm making up things as I go. All right, and more to come here on the Steve Cochran Show. Stay with us.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
312-981-7200. The reason I laugh at this song, good pull, Joe, is that we went to karaoke on Friday night.
Actually, it's really fitting because it was National Margarita Day.
I know. That's what I thought of us. I was like, I'm actually having margaritas on Margarita Day. My friend Joel, who's an avid listener to the show. That was fun. I haven't seen Joel in a long time. He came out for the Schadenfreude show.
Is that the gentleman that I saw the video of him singing?
No. That was a different one. That was good singing, though, wasn't it?
It was really good singing.
But Joel did karaoke. He did that song. He did Tequila.
Oh.
Now, if you're familiar at all with that song, it's an instrumental except for the word tequila. So he stood up there the whole time, and he just, like, bounced his head while dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. When it got the tequila, he's like, tequila. And by the time he did it, by the third time through, the whole bar was ready for it. Sure. And then when we got the tequila, everybody did it together. It was a very good moment. Cross-cultural. There you go. Cross-cultural moment. Everybody can enjoy that song.
Dave, did you have a margarita on margarita night?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're lucky, man. I had way too many.
You had too many margaritas?
Well, the problem was, I blame my brother.
Dave probably had multiple margaritas, yeah. And that's why he said no to one margarita, he had multiple.
Oh, that's right. We're going with the bit that
Steve's not here today,
Dave's a
day off from
speaking
the
of alcohol,
abuse.
I'm going to give away a pair of tickets to the 5th Annual Chocolate, Wine, and Spirits Expo in Chicago at Plumbers Hall on March 9th and 10th. Get tickets at chocolatewineandspirits.com. I'm going to give way to the seventh caller.
312-981-7200, seventh caller right now. Yeah, I won't play that game with you.
Thank you. I
like
appreciate
Kale,
that.
And I know that he does not drink, so that's a good bit.
Thank you, Justin.
But yeah, I blame it on my brother. So he was in. He lives in California. He was in for the weekend. And I had successfully, at the taqueria, I went to the story's been unfolding throughout the morning. But after the Schadenfreude show this weekend, we went to a taqueria that had karaoke on Chicago Avenue. Great time. But I had successfully, I was schmoozing going from table to table. We kind of took over this taqueria. There were like 50 of us. And I'd gone from table to table, and everyone was ordering, Coronas or Pacificos or whatever it is, and they did it in buckets. Mm-hmm. So they're like, you want a beer? I'm like, oh, I'd love a beer. So I was getting free beer. Like, I didn't have a tab going. I didn't eat dinner. So I was just like, every time I get a free, so I was like, it was perfect, right?
That's a great.
It's not really free beer. Someone's paying.
Someone's paying for it.
Free
but
to
I was
Justin.
Like, this is free to me. I'm like, this is amazing. I'm going to make it out of here. And I sat down towards the end of the night, and I was getting ready to leave, and my brother's like, what are you drinking? And I'm like, I don't have a beer right now. He's like, we got to get margaritas. And I'm like, we don't have to get margaritas. And so he got a pitcher of margaritas, and it was fuel for another 2 hours. And then the pitcher started flowing. So I had started with the free beers and moved into the margaritas. And at the end of the night, someone who was sitting, they were very disorganized because everyone was jumping around tables to tables. So the waitresses at the place were freaked out of whose bill was whose and everyone was going to skip. Somebody came up to me who was sitting at the table with us and said, you know what? They put all of this table on our bill. Here's $20 for our stuff and here's the bill to me. And I'm like, I was just like musical chairs. I wasn't even where I was just sat down. And I'm like, oh, great. And the bill was like, $100 or something. I'm like, so I like when it was all said and done, after I'd done all that work to get the free, I ended up having to drop $80 to cover the table.
For all the margaritas.
I ended up paying for whoever had left and left the bill there. And I'm like,
See, there's no such thing as free beer.
There's no such thing as a free beer.
So what time was this?
This, we went till 2 o'clock in the morning.
See, that's why you leave early.
You
can't do that.
I know. I can't do that.
On this shift.
I can't do that at all. We were all living a life. This was the 20th anniversary show. And when we were 24, we couldn't do it. We all had a show the next night. So the idea that I am still standing, you can hear it in my voice, but I got to Sunday morning and I was just like, I cannot believe I just did two nights in a row.
My favorite part is Miles hearing you guys talk about staying out late and drinking.
Here's what Miles said.
A list of goals.
Miles said to my wife, my son Miles, who's 11, he came to the shows and he was a hit. The shows are kind of rated R. One of them was at Hideout, and one of them was at Cards Against Humanity. They're 20. We all wrote these jokes when we were 24 years old. So some of it, I had to ready him to say, there's going to be some material in the show that's not for rebroadcast.
Was he like the MC?
No, he was just watching the show. Oh. It was all good. But he said to me, and this is terrible, but he said to me, or to my wife, he said on Saturday, he goes, I'm going to stay till midnight tonight, because that's when the party was from 7 to midnight or whatever. He goes, I want to stay till midnight so I can be hungover. I was like, oh my, that's not how it works. But I was like, no, that's not, I'm going to stop talking about it. Obviously, that was the flow of the evening or the day-long Saturday conversation as we were all recovering from
all about your hangovers.
Yeah,
so that's what Miles picked up.
So Miles then started DJing at the party on Saturday night, which was really fun. So he had actually cut the music at one point. It was a big party. There were probably 100-plus people in this gallery space. All mulling about with some music in the background. He cut the music and he got on the mic in the booth. And I was like, that takes courage. And he goes, any special requests from the DJ? And I was like, and it was a funny moment. He hit the button again, and it went back on. I was like, well, that's pretty good. Like, he hasn't mastered the beats and stuff like that, but at least he knew to get the people's attention.
Let people know they can put in their requests. Yeah. I love when you can ask for a song. That's my favorite kind of DJ.
The only problem with this DJ, particularly this 11-year-old DJ, is that he would always call me over every 10 seconds or so to go, do you have a song? What's the next song? What should I play next? I'm like, that's not how this is going to work. Either you're a DJ, but I'm not going to feed you every song for every time. You're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, because I'm busy getting ready for the free beer and the pitchers of margaritas.
No. By Saturday night, there was a lot of water. Like I skipped the fun on Saturday night. I just
okay, give us an idea on the quantity you're talking here.
I probably had, it wasn't a lot. I mean, I just think that maybe I didn't eat dinner. So yeah, three beers, mm-hmm, probably free, you know, and then you lose track a little bit because they had these glasses of, and there was pitchers of margaritas. Yeah. So people kept, you turn your head and people would fill it up because everyone was trying to get rid of the margaritas before the night ended.
Dave, you know the rule of thumb.
So probably 3 to 5 margaritas.
When people claim to have 3 beers, we got to double it. Right. So that means 6.
Right, that's 6 beers.
Yep.
I did not have 6 beers.
And then you're saying 3 to 5 margaritas, which
so you
is
say 10?
6 to 10 margaritas.
I believe he didn't have 6 beers.
Well, I did not realize when I was done with it. It was such a great night, and I thank everyone for coming out, and there were hundreds of people involved that I had not seen for years. And I didn't realize at the end of the night how I felt, meaning, you know, like I was in the moment. I was like, all right, I'll see you guys later. I'll see you tomorrow.
The adrenaline going.
Yeah, and I got in the Uber to go home, and I was just like, why is this Uber spinning? I was like, what happened here? It's like the minute that I got any fresh air, I had trouble. But it was a great time, and also, you're right, Dave, that's not something that I do at all. I rarely drink. I'm rarely out more than one because of the schedule. We're in bed by 9 o'clock. So it was a very weird experience. They have 2 nights in a row where you do that. So, but it was a good time, and I'll never do it again.
There you go. 20 years
from
now.
44 for the 40th anniversary when we're 64. I don't know.
Yeah, man. By the way, you might want to tell Miles being hungover is not.
I'm not
a fun
telling him
thing.
Anything.
It's not something to aspire
exactly.
to.
Exactly. It was not my best parenting moment to be like.
But he just thinks it means you're tired.
Yeah,
right?
That's
overtired.
Exactly.
Misinterpreting
exactly.
The term.
Exactly. But I quickly was like, what kind of example are we setting here? So yesterday there was a lot of makeup.
Well, you're a talker, so you probably were expressing all morning, like verbally saying, I'm hungover. If I was hungover, I'd keep it to myself. I mean, I feel
And
good,
also,
it.
It didn't help that my wife was hungover, too.
Oh, so a double
So it was
hangover.
A double hangover for the 2 days. So anyway, so that's the wrap-up on the post-party hangover from the Schadenfreude Show. All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, Patrick Sharp's going to join us for Breakfast with the Blackhawk. That's going to be fun. We got to get back on those winning ways after this weekend, but we'll talk with Sharpie about how we're going to do that coming up.
And it's a trade deadline today, Dave.
I know, right? 2 o'clock is
2 o'clock. Yep.
2 o'clock. We'll see what happens.
Doesn't that mean you're drunk?
No. It means I was drunk yesterday.
Alcohol, my permanent accessory.
Never again. 312-981-7200. Patrick Sharp coming up after the 9 o'clock news. Joined by CLTV coming up here as well. The last day of the election, the candidates scurrying about. This is usually, I wonder, this might be a good conversation for the media. I know Andrea does with the reporters. I wonder if the idea of the hit piece, the last day hit piece in the news where someone drops something that's damaging or disparaging against another candidate, if that is going by the wayside because of early voting and the fact that not everybody is actually voting on election day. So it used to be you would wait till right now for the negative campaign ad. The infrared black and white, Tony Preckwinkle wants to take away your soda. That kind of thing. Or like if that just goes away now because like Pete just said, he voted the weekend.
So there's no effect.
There's no effect on a piece, a piece that might be on a Monday or even election day.
We had this discussion back in November when we were voting because I voted the first day you could early vote. And you were like, no, I need to vote on election day so you can have all that information,
right.
The hit ads and whatnot, right, the day before. But it has to have an effect. You know, like it has to, those don't mean as much. Maybe those have come out sooner. Have there been more hit pieces?
I have to give a lot of credit to this campaign, and it might just be because there's so many candidates, and maybe when there's a runoff, you'll see more of this. But it hasn't been that extremely negative. You've seen a lot of candidates doing ads trying to establish themselves, but you haven't seen too many where it's like I said, the black and white and frayed, you know, throw a stat up, misleading stat. Say, do you know where this candidate is? You know,
well, there's too many people to keep track of.
Right.
I think. You'd have to select which one you're going to take the hit on.
Right. And I think a lot of people have taken that, like the front runners, the Dailies and the Preckwinkles and maybe the Mendozas and Gary Chicos. Maybe they're tussling with each other. So there hasn't been as much on the other candidates.
I still think that if the election thing doesn't work out, instead of a runoff, there a good game of Red Rover would work with, since there's enough candidates on each side.
Now, here's a fun little stat. So, because of the mail-in votes, this is what the real story is on Monday. The polls that came out today show mere percentage points, if not fractions, between the top four or five candidates. And in doing so, the top two are going to get a runoff. So it doesn't look like anyone is going to get 50% plus one is what you get to avoid a runoff. Now, the issue is that there are a ton of mail-in ballots. People mail in, and it's thousands. So it's not over the top. It's not like a statewide or national election.
I think we saw around 5,000 or 10,000
or whatever it is. But those votes will not be tabulated until after the election. The City Board of Elections says that the day for the deadline for that total would be March 13th. So they have 2 weeks to count those. So if we're talking mere percentage points tomorrow night, or if it's too close to call, if you have two candidates who are both at 11%, and the winner of those 11, whoever gets 12% is going to go into the runoff, we're not going to know until March 13th. And I would assume you're not going to see concession speeches from anybody, because they're going to be waiting on those mail-ins. Now, the April 2nd election doesn't get moved back. April 2nd is the runoff.
The quick turnaround.
So it's going to be a 2 week, once they establish who the candidates are, and we may not know until March 13th, you're only going to have from March 13th to April 2nd to campaign against each other for the mayor of Chicago.
Yeah, March 13th, the day before Steve Cochran's birthday.
Yeah.
Just a notable date.
Yeah. So that's an interesting story, so we'll pay attention to that. And I, like I said, it's going to make tomorrow night a little bit, I think, very interesting for people who are covering the elections, because there may not be a declared winner.
And you are covering the election.
I am.
You're
hosting
a show.
7 o'clock tomorrow night. A lot of great people coming
through. So you might have nothing to talk about.
We'll have plenty to talk about. A lot of races and a lot of issues to talk about, but we may not have the two candidates that are going to win. We'll find out. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
720 WGN, Steve Cochran Show. Joining us on the line, Patrick Sharp, longtime Blackhawk, now analyst. Patrick, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So today is the trade deadline, and I'm always interested from a player's perspective. Do you think about these kind of things if you're a player on a squad on the day that the deadline's approaching?
It's something that definitely weighs over your head. Guys are in different boats, I would have to say. Like, I don't think the Jonathan Taves or a Patrick Kane lose too much sleep the day before the trade deadline, but it is something that we just never know, because teams get aggressive, teams get active. There's a lot of moves to be made leading up to the deadline, and especially the final hours and minutes. So some guys like to move, some guys like to stay. Every situation is different, but it's one where you keep your cell phone close, you make sure you're in touch with your agent, and you just never know what might happen.
Yeah, some guys have no trade clauses and it can't be moved without their approval. Did you ever come close to getting dealt on deadline day?
Never with the Hawks, but when I was in Dallas for those 2 years, my final year in Dallas, we did not have a good team. I was expected to move at the deadline, but I got surgery on my hip instead, so I did not get traded. But it was a stressful time. You know, you never know what's around the corner. It's a big move. I know you're going to play some hockey, and the league takes care of you, but uprooting your family and It's a difficult thing to do, and it's tough to leave your team that you're with, too. You spend all year with each other building towards a goal, and then all of a sudden pieces of that team start leaving one by one. But I was fortunate enough never to be traded on deadline. I did get traded in the offseason, though, once, and then early in my career, well before the deadline. So trades, it's part of the business, but I think it's part of being a professional as well.
The Blackhawks have a track record. Stan Bowman's got a track record of making deals at the deadline, and he's had success with that. And of course, this team now is sort of at a crossroads, I guess, after this weekend. I don't know how much of an impact the results the last two games will have, but what's your gut tell you, Patrick? Do you think that the Blackhawks are going to do something today?
I wouldn't be shocked if something happens. I don't think anything of major significance, and I don't think this weekend has much to do with what will go on. I think Stan and his staff has really done a good job already prior to the deadline of making some moves. Let's not forget what he's already done earlier in the season, acquiring Dylan Strome and Brendan Perlini in a 2-for-1 trade. Dylan Strome has gone on to have a point per game average since joining the team. He's a 21-year-old kid. That's a pretty significant acquisition. I think Drake Kajula, who came over from the Edmonton Oilers, has fit in nicely. He's not making a whole lot of money. Fits in perfect with Kane and Taves on that top line. And that might sound easier said than done to play with Kane and Taves, but a guy like Kajula's come in, I think of like a little bit of Andrew Shaw in Drake Kajula, where he gets to the front of the net. He's got that willingness to pay the price to score goals, and that's been a top line as well. And let's not forget about our starting goaltender, who's been out with an injury for a couple months now. If he manages to come back and play anytime around the deadline, that could be the biggest trade acquisition in the whole league, bringing back Corey Crawford and have him start a game. So if something happens with the Hawks, I expect it to be to improve the team, not only now, but going forward. There's a lot to be excited about in Hawksland these days. There's light at the end of the tunnel. You can start to see the vision of Stan and his staff. The team is going in the right direction, and I'm excited for what happens, not only down the stretch this year, but the off season and next season.
Yeah, Patrick, it's interesting, the psyche of this team, because you'll have, obviously the slow start, but then you had this torrid winning streak, and then a couple of games that don't go your way, and they were close, but then don't go your way this weekend. The up and down roller coaster effect, what's the mental price on players as they have to dig out of a hole like that?
Yeah, it's all part of it, to be honest with you, and it's about being professional. And whether it's a win or loss, you go to bed that day, wake up, and head into practice and get ready to play that next game. That really is the mindset. Something I learned in playoff hockey, to be honest with you, was learning how to ride that roller coaster. You win a game in the playoffs, you feel like you got to plan your Stanley Cup parade, and then if you lose one, you feel like it's time to go golfing. And that's not a good way to play the game of hockey. I think even keel is the right approach. You just keep chugging forward. The next game is always the most important. Disappointing weekend, no question about it. Opportunity to maybe climb the standings in the Western Conference and really solidify that playoff spot. But honestly, if it was a 2-0 weekend versus an 0-2 weekend, it really isn't going to make a difference these next 6 weeks. The Blackhawks are still in the thick of things going forward. Big West Coast swing coming up, 2 or 3 games on the road. And again, the chance of Corey Crawford playing a game has to have those guys excited. But managing that up and down roller coaster of emotions is all part of being a pro, and it doesn't get any harder on trade deadline day when you're looking at the internet and your cell phone to see who's moving where.
So, Patrick, I have watched the 2-10-2 podcast that you did with Duncan Keith. They did a ride from the United Center to Lakeview, where they live, and it's talking about how they both came from small towns, Patrick from Thunder Bay, and then you played in Connecticut, so you were used to more suburban life, etc. And you told a funny story about when you first got here and going to get your wife a gift, and so I wondered if you could share it with everybody.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good story to share from my behalf. It's a little embarrassing, but I think it was mid-December. I got traded December 5th. So once I actually got settled after a couple of weeks, it was Christmas time, and I realized I hadn't bought Abby a Christmas present. So I think I was going to get her a cell phone or something like that, the new cell phone that came out. So I found a store to buy it from. I got in the car, and I drove downtown from Lincoln Park and realize that I'm not in suburban New Jersey or New England or small town Colorado. I got nowhere to park. So I drove around for about half an hour to an hour looking for a place to park. Eventually just drove back to the hotel and didn't even buy her a Christmas present because I didn't really know how to adjust to the city of Chicago and living downtown. So thank you for bringing that up. That's a nice way to start the week. Embarrassed myself. I adjusted nicely now to the city, and Chicago is home for both of us.
Well, we've all been there.
I think the other part of that was that, and they showed this clip yesterday at the United Center where you guys are talking about how you go from having deer and rabbits in the yard to having city rats, I believe was the term.
That's a big difference driving home late at night down some of those back alleys in downtown Chicago. Oh, yeah. I'm sure everyone listening has seen a few rats scamper across the...
Indeed.
They also made fun of, when they went through Roscoe Village, they made fun of, Seabrook was the first one to build a house there, and Duncan Keith said, you know, that's the worst spot ever. Why would you build a house there? But they said he was in on early on the real estate.
Early, yeah.
So, Patrick, we have the MB financial question from a listener, and this is an 8-year-old, Brooks Bennett from Lake Bluff. And this is what he asked, but we kind of had to adjust it. When I'm fortunate to win this contest, can I eat breakfast at your house, like Eggo waffles with syrup and whipped cream? So he's not going to be eating Eggo waffles with you, but what's your was your preferred breakfast as a player?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, we get so pampered as players, especially when you play for the Hawks. I would drive to the rink. This is one of the things I miss most about playing. Is I'd wake up, get in the car, have a coffee on the way to the rink, and as soon as I get there, I'd have a nice egg. I think it was a 3-egg omelet with whatever was in there, you name it. The chefs at the United Center would prepare it for us. It would be sitting there waiting. So just an omelet, you know, some nice protein, carbs, and fats to get the day going. But the days of having somebody cook the breakfast for me is long gone. And now it's... It's me eating the same thing every day, but I got to take about 20 minutes to cook it myself.
So congratulations, Brooks. You win an autographed Chicago Blackhawks hockey puck courtesy of MB Financial Bank. MB means business. Go to WGMRadio.com/contest to submit your question for a chance to win.
Patrick Sharp, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too.
That's great. That's a great interview. Who hasn't done that, though? Gone downtown and think that you're going to find a spot and then be like, oh, that's right. It's downtown Chicago.
Yeah, when you don't want to pull the trigger for going in an actual parking garage. He's pretty funny. You know, he does broadcasts with my husband, Pat, and there's... Patrick Sharp draws a lot of fans.
The
other guys are great, but Patrick Sharp's a star. And so, but Patrick will tell my husband, they're here for you, Pat. They're not. They're there.
He's
for
motivating.
Sharpie. Yeah. Hey, all these fans are here for you.
When you said the other guys are great, are you including your husband?
I am. My husband is good. But you know, Tom Ayers, Steve Conroyd, and Adam Burrish.
But Sharpie, he's the guy.
On New Year's Eve, we were with Adam Burrish and his girlfriend and somebody else, and we were out, and somebody came up to Adam and said, hey, you're Patrick Sharp, right? And he's like, no. And that was it. He didn't say, I'm Adam Burrish. He just, no.
No.
And they like sheepishly walked away.
At a certain point, you just say yes, right?
Right, that's what I would have said, yes.
Yeah.
He did not like that. So.
Exactly. It doesn't.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. I'm on the deep end, watch as I glide,
as Dean said, don't throw cold water.
Yeah.
On the moment the world shared last night, but it was so I love it, but it wasn't spontaneous. The way they shot that from the backside is different than the other performances. He knew what his spot was to go onto the bench. They knew how to get close. It was all rehearsed.
Well, even how they walked out of their seats and got up there.
Yeah,
you're no fun at all. I mean, Mary, wasn't it romantic?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The way he was walking around. I could tell he was really nervous, though.
I believe
he was very nervous.
I thought he was nervous, but I think.
To sing.
And he knows that, I mean, he, learned how to sing from Eddie Vedder. He's an actor that learned to sing. He's not a singer.
Right.
And you're on the stage with, you know, Lady Gaga's like an Elton John. They play the piano and sing. They're, you know, her talent is. So there was a lot of pressure.
He just has to go, in the shadow, in the shadow. I could do it.
And Mary, nobody talked about this, but this is all I could think about. I used to be a lifeguard and taught swimming lessons, and we had to wear Speedo bathing suits. And the back of her dress was just like a Speedo bathing suit, a one piece. And it's the most comfortable thing you'll ever wear. And I thought, she looks so comfortable in that.
Oh, you mean with the cross?
Yeah, the cross in the back. That's where the zip was. And I
loved her dress.
I loved it. She was.
What was that?
She didn't change her clothes for it. She just got up.
I mean, Justin thought it was staged, but, you know, that's...
Well, because there was no MC, you know? I mean, there was nobody to say, hey, here they are. Nobody announced them. All of a sudden, the music just started playing. And I was in the kitchen, and I heard the music playing. What's going on? Missing it, and I ran in there.
I don't. The whole show was staged.
The whole show. I get it. I'm not. I don't think. I'm not saying that that's like a secret. I'm saying that it was a the way they shot it. They obviously had to rehearse it that way because of the way they were comfortable with the camera being that close, and he had to slide on the bench at the end for that romantic moment for them to size it up perfectly. But it was an act. It's two actors doing. That's why I said, wow, it's great.
But no,
it's almost like they were actors.
I don't know.
They acted a romantic song. It was not real.
But Bradley Cooper, you have to have a certain coolness factor, like a John Hamm, whatever. I have a feeling if you see him walk down the street and he goes and sits, everything he does is charming and engaging, and he's not acting.
You don't think Rami Malek could have pulled that off?
He fell off the stage.
In the shallow.
Did he fall off the stage?
He did.
I
hurt
missed
himself.
That award. I went to bed.
They were saying that
it's not funny.
You know, it's
well, falling is funny usually.
No, it's not.
I mean, Jennifer Lawrence, when she fell going up the stairs that time, it was funny.
The paramedics
had to
be called.
It's a president. It's funny, too.
The paramedics did have to be called. Rami Malek did fall off the stage. How dare you make light
of that?
I'm sorry.
Oh,
my gosh. Is he okay? He really
did. He's okay. But he also had, there was talk that he may have had too much to drink as well.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well, that happens. Helen Mirren is flawless.
Okay. I have a fashion question for you guys.
Okay. Look beautiful.
You didn't think it was pink?
No. The guy,
his outfit
the
was
Aquaman,
not pink.
I don't remember his name, but the Aquaman.
Yeah.
My wife said,
Manoa.
Did not like the choice for him to let
his
hair down.
Wait, I want Dave to say the name again.
Isn't Manoa?
Yeah.
Jason Manoa.
Dave knows all the hard names.
Why was he with Helen Mirren? That was weird.
But my wife said that she did not like the choice he made to let his hair down, as opposed to he had a scrunchie.
Yeah.
If you know, because he had long hair on his wrist when he was doing the presentation. And that was probably for the red carpet where he had put it into a ponytail. And she thought that by letting it down, it looked much more informal and not right for an Oscar look.
It did look informal. Though, as a person who carries a hair tie on their wrist all the time, sometimes you go up, down, up, down. Yeah. You know, he might have just been in a down stage.
Like he was going
for
comfort.
That's his look, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just a hairy guy.
I'm just so hairy. I don't care about the Oscars. I'm so hairy. All right.
I thought some of the comedy teams they put up there together, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, that was good. And that Awkwafina thing.
Yeah. That was funny.
Who is she? I don't even know.
She was in Crazy Rich Asians. She was really good.
Oh, she was.
Yeah, she was.
Right.
She's a stand-up comedian.
And her and John Mulaney
know each
other. Those two are very funny together.
I thought Mike Myers and Dana Carvey were great.
Oh, that was great.
They were good.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, we're going to continue the conversation and continue the broadcast at 10 o'clock. Bill and Wendy join us at 10 o'clock. But we'll take a quick break here and then the news at 720 WGN.
Well, this is definitely Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
Steve, hopefully back tomorrow. Justin Kaufman stepping in for him, along with Dave.
I believe Steve will be back tomorrow because he's asking me about tomorrow's show. So.
Okay, good. Steve back in the chair tomorrow.
And it's awesome. We have Coach Jeremy Colleton on tomorrow, so it'll be good to talk to him right after the trade deadline if there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, we'll see what happens today.
That's at 8:40.
2 o'clock, Dave?
2 o'clock.
A lot of great news stories. We didn't talk at all about the Bulls are ruining their tank by winning games. They've won 3 in a row. Which is good. Otto Porter, I'm telling you, man. This guy's been a big addition. He's not only great on the court, but he seems to be taking a leadership role.
He has. Markkanen's playing well. And, you know, they gutted out a tough game on Friday night in Orlando where it looked like Orlando was going to win. And then the Bulls came back and got a couple of free throws from Markkanen. And then Orlando still had one last possession, so it went down to the wire, and they pulled it out. So we'll see. They got Milwaukee tonight at the United Center.
I'd like to see them beat the Bucks just to let them know a couple years down the road it's going to be a serious rivalry.
Well, you're hot on the Bucks, right? Because they're playing better, or they were.
I'm not hot on the Bucks. I don't like the Milwaukee Bucks.
I not Back like the them, but they were
Jack
playing
Sigma
well.
Days of the was it Sigma? Who's it? They had the couple of '80s basketball great names playing up in Milwaukee at the time. I'm trying to remember, Joe, you might remember this, Dave, you might. He was kind of like was it Jack Sikma? He was a big white center for the Bucks in the 80s.
From Illinois Wesleyan,
Oh, look at you, Dave.
Also, we haven't talked at all about spring training. It's underway. The White Sox, of course, it was Friday afternoon that they introduced Manny Machado in the Padres. He seemed to take a couple of shots at the White Sox.
I don't know if it was shot so much, but he did say that Yonder Alonso and John Jay couldn't say enough good things about San Diego.
What was that?
They both played for the Padres.
I know. You know, I don't know why. I was like, you know what? We're already down. So now you're going to just play. You're going to throw shade on the White Sox and White Sox fans after you didn't take our deal. I don't know. I got a bad vibe. I got a bad vibe for Manny Machado in that press conference. Like, he had a chip on his shoulder about Chicago. And I was like, dude, you are not, you're persona non grata here. And I don't know. I just got a vibe.
But you had a chip on your shoulder about Manny Machado when the news conference started.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So you were looking at it.
I was looking for it. Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. Saying something nice about San Diego is not saying something bad about Chicago. They aren't. It isn't the same.
Super Joe's with me. He's with me.
Yeah, I mean, this is your friend that you want to be on your team. Sure, you can say some nice things about San Diego, but I think I would have chosen a different time.
Yeah.
You know, you want him on your team. San Diego, I mean, yeah, it's just the beach, dude. Come on. South side, that's where it's at.
and then the Cubs side, I think
we got beaches.
We got beaches, that's right. We got Oak Street Beach, we got 31st
North Avenue
Beach.
North Avenue.
All right, so, and the last thing with the Cubs, you know, with Bryce Harper, really interesting to see the Dodgers are sneaking back in the conversation. You know, another team that everybody speculated was on the north side of Chicago. Was there any way? I mean, Ricketts came out last week saying, we got no money, we're out. Is there any way that because Bryce Harper's still out there that the Cubs could think about a Harper?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they made that abundantly clear that that's not
so
happening.
So the Dodgers, right? But they're back in it.
Well, the Dodgers, they've kind of been lurking in the weeds, I think, the whole time since the Yasiel Puig trade, remember, everybody said, they're just clearing space for Bryce Harper. But supposedly, Harper and the Phillies were just wrapping up their deal this weekend. And all of a sudden, you get this word this morning that the Dodgers are in Vegas meeting with Harper last night and talking about possibly a shorter deal. Like there's maybe like a 3-year, $100 million deal as opposed to a 10-year, $300-plus million dollar.
Because Harper's the kind of guy that even at 28 years old could still get a huge contract, so why not just do a couple of years? It's fascinating. Good weekend for sports, for Chicago sports and others. So, but we'll be all over those stories. All right, coming up, let's talk a little technology and insurance. I'm fascinated by this story about how patterns change, and it's a great point about ride sharing and how work arrangements and people working from home, but also the opportunity to just take Uber everywhere, that the insurance company has to rethink the way that they charge you. Used to be, you know, hey, this is your plan, this is your, you know, this is what you do. But now they have to start thinking about as a pay-as-you-go.
Car sitting in your driveway, not taking the 16,000 miles a year.
I love it. We'll have that conversation coming up.
But equipment like this in the home of the future, we may not have to go to work.
Now, from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
In the 21st century, it may be that no home will be complete without a computerized communications console.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Boy, I stand corrected, Mary. 312-981-7200. Texters are mad at me for throwing cold water on Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga last night.
They were reminding you that he was also nervous to perform on Ellen.
They were reminding me how I was so super wrong and why I can't just let a romantic moment be a romantic moment.
Yeah, that's. I'm with the listeners. I think you're wrong on a lot of occasions.
Someone made a good point that the story goes that Bradley Cooper had a hand in directing the actual performance as well. So what my point again was just about, you know, this was set up for that moment because he's supposed to slide on the bench. You could tell by the cameras doing it from the back instead of the front.
But they executed it well.
But
they
executed great. That's a great way to put it. Executed well. But it wasn't a spontaneous moment where they were like so romantic they couldn't get enough of each other. They're actors. But
Justin, quit while you're
ahead. All right, I'm done. Yeah. I'm not going. I'm not
Steve
doing
Grzanich
anymore. You're right.
Pointed out the entire show is orchestrated. just Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga.
I don't need another wave of people saying you. Yeah. That's what I gotta like use capital capital letters on text. So I backtrack. It was romantic. All right, let's move on. Do you know, this is an interesting story. I just kind of teased it right before the break about how a lot of people have changed their commuter habits in the last couple of years, and specifically with rideshare, because I live in the city, and I know for firsthand that a lot of times that I used to drive, I don't drive anymore. I might take Uber, I might take Lyft, or work from home. In my case, I don't get to do that. My wife gets to do that all the time. But you know, that's got to change the way, and I never thought about this, the way that the car insurance industry works. Right? At a certain point, there's going to have to be, as technology changes, the plans we used to have.
And behaviors, yeah, because I think we all used to, yeah, you drive, you know, you live in this area, so you drive 16,000 miles a year to work.
Well, it turns out, yeah, knew that. And it turns out that I was, by just pontificating, all states way ahead of me. They have started to work on a pay-as-you-go model with, and we're going to talk about that right now with Chicago Allstate agent Jesse Ortega. Jesse, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
I appreciate being here. This is my second time. I'm a twofer.
You're a twofer.
Maybe I get a sticker or something.
Where are you located?
I am in Avondale, Chicago. Been there now for 2 years.
Okay, so let me ask about this. This is MileWise. So what is MileWise?
MileWise is Allstate's pay-as-you-go auto insurance product. It gives customers greater control of, you know, and transparency into their insurance costs.
That's correct. So this is something that the industry had to come up with, because it used to be, and I still have the old model where it's, you know, I pay and every month I have to pay a deal, and there's really just coverage. But this idea of my car's sitting in my garage, or maybe I'm not using the car I used to use. The point being that there's obviously a change in the way that we are commuting and using our transportation, so there should be a change in the way that the industry...
It just makes sense. And one of the top concerns I get from customers is, you know, I just don't drive as much as I should. Isn't there some way we can, you know, adjust my rate accordingly? And this is it.
I mean, how does it work? How does a product like this work?
Well, I mean, essentially, you have a small device that could fit in your palm. It goes into the car underneath the steering column, and there's an app that's coupled with it, and it's just like it sounds. Essentially, you're paying per the miles you drive. There is a daily base rate, but it's significantly less than what you would be paying in normal premiums.
So essentially, it counts how many. It's like an odometer. It's counting how many miles you've driven, and there's a cost associated to that.
That's right. Right. That's what the device and the app are doing.
So who's using these kind of things? I mean, is it someone that are you looking at a younger generation that's adapting technology, or is this something that everybody across the board would be comfortable using?
I'm seeing that. I am, as well as even the baby boomers. You know, they're just not driving as much. They have lifestyles in which things are close to them. They can walk, you know, maybe take a bike. So I'm seeing it on both ends.
So there is, some people have concern about our phones knowing too much about us, and, you know, our little Alexa smart speakers in our house knowing too much about us. Does anyone ever question, like, this is Big Brother watching them from their car?
I get that, and it's understandable. It's just adjustments that we have to make, you know, and then kind of get over that. You know, that fear that really doesn't need to be.
It's not a bait and switch. You're not going to say, hey, we're going to count your miles, and then, oh, we know that you're also texting in the car, which you shouldn't be doing. But
well,
there is that
idea that talk about the app, because the app also plays a big role, and it's not just about the little odometer thing, but the app has, it's not just about miles. There's other ways that you can track behaviors.
It's so true. It's about encouraging better driving habits. It's going to show you how hard you're braking, perhaps, or maybe how fast you were going. What a great tool for parents that have teenagers, right, or young drivers at home. But it also gives you diagnostics on your car. You know, maybe your battery's about to go, or there's some engine trouble. It would alert you and even gives you a maintenance schedule to potentially follow.
Now, at the end of the day, it is insurance. So what does it cover? When you're talking about just tracking miles, it's one thing, but what does MileWise cover?
Right. So it still works like the great, you know, full coverage that Allstate will offer you, like the traditional plan. All the coverages are still going to be there. This is just a way to pay for what you're using.
Yeah,
everybody likes that. There's a lot of cell phone plans now that you only pay for what you use, as opposed to just being blocked in with everybody else. Allstate's a very proactive company. I know we have Allstate Insurance, and our agent will send us a note saying, hey, we know you hit a certain birthday. You should consider doing this, you know, things that we didn't know, to save money. It's not even to add on a product, just to... It's a they're always, you've been ahead of the curve all along the way.
It's go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, let's face it, it's not going to be for everyone. I'm a dad, three kids. We're all across the city getting them.
You would lose money on this deal.
Activities. Like, for some reason, it's just a whole other job that we have, right? My wife and I. But so we have something called DriveWise, and that's also kind of embracing this technology. It's just not based on paying per mile, but it's also a great way to watch your driving habits and you get rewarded for it. So that's something I've heard.
That's been very popular. Mm-hmm. It is interesting because I think that it is comforting to know that Allstate and other companies are thinking about how the technology that we use each and every day can be adapted, right? Because that's the worst thing for any company is when you're like, we're still acting like it's 1987 while we're all of our charged for it,
right?
And that seems to be the issue, because you have to stay on top of how people are using this and even how people are driving.
Yeah, it's really great to be part of a company that knows how to evolve and change when necessary.
Okay, Jesse, where is your practice?
So I'm in Avondale, Chicago, and I can be found, if it's okay, you can just look me up at Ortega Family at Allstate. You would see us there.
And you can find out more about the MileWise through Jesse, and just look it up online. Allstate agent Jesse Ortega in studio. Jesse, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. All right, we're back tomorrow. Steve's back tomorrow, the Steve Cochran Show. Right now, Bill and Wendy are in studio. Good weekend. You guys have a good weekend?
Yeah, fantastic. Oscar crazy.
Yeah, did you bet? Did your family bet?
No. I watched it, and then I interrupted it to watch The Walking Dead, and then I went back and fast-forwarded.
Did you know? I didn't know this, because Miles actually showed me this, because on IMDb, it lists the most popular shows that are on TV right now, right? The top 10 sure. popular shows just by download or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Number one, would you know what number one would be? I did not know this.
Popular in HBO terms of show. Overall viewership?
Right now, like as of right now. Like they don't do it over, you know, just they're up to, it's pretty much based on.
Is it Game of Thrones?
It's Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But number five was The
Khaleesi
Walking Dead.
Khaleesi was funny last night on the Oscars.
Yeah, she was funny.
I thought she was good.
But The Walking Dead was up. I wouldn't think it would be.
Even though viewership is down, there's still a ton of people watching.
Top five shows that people are watching that show. Like
right.
Crazy. I mean, I think a couple of Netflix, HBO shows, and the only one that was not those two networks was Walking Dead.
I didn't want spoilers.
Where was F Troop? Does it say where F Troop is?
Troop did not make the top 10.
Didn't make top 10.
Oh, but you know what? It could have been right at the 11th.
Probably
12,
11th or 12th.
Right?
Yeah, people love Ken Berry.
Right. I sure did.
Everyone does.
I had last year we had done the bet thing where, you know, like who bet the categories of the family.
Yeah.
And then like a half hour in, I'm like, oh, we forgot to do it.
Oh.
So
oh,
like,
oh, no.
Can we go back? And I was like, now why are we watching this? I don't even know why we're watching.
I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but explain now that magic moment between Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper was you're not a fan of.
Gosh, I just was saying that the idea that it was such a, it was a very good performance. I really liked
it.
But I was like, it was designed that way.
Oh, sure.
It was designed because the cameras were backlit, like they were behind, like the way they designed the whole thing. And I'm like, if you would have done it normal, like an Oscar normal where you just did it from the stage and it was the same performance, I don't think it would have been as intimate or memorable. I think you would have been like, oh, that's cool. Bradley Cooper did well.
Yes.
But the way they shot that and they stylized that like a from behind, got real close and he got on the bench. And then the only thing I pushed back on, which is dumb, is just that it wasn't necessarily spontaneous.
So they didn't really just fall in love at
they
the piano?
They didn't really fall in love at the piano. That's my point. It was blocked.
It wasn't their best version of it either, I got to tell you.
There's probably a piece of glow tape where he was supposed to sit.
But wasn't it kind of cool that you were seeing it from a different angle?
Yeah,
like for me, because I wear 3D glasses whenever I watch anything.
Sure.
I felt like I was there. I felt like I was behind the scenes helping to move benches.
And it was also crazy that Bette Midler just stood and sang and she executed well, and Jennifer Hudson sang her song
well. They did fine. And they'll be non-memorable because they didn't do it all artistic and cool.
Right? Yeah.
Get real close to Lady Gaga. Real close.
Are you not going to watch the awards anymore now? Are you mad at them?
I'm not.
You're out.
You seem to be arguing that they did a really good job of TV and you don't like it.
Right.
Enough with
That's
this
exactly
nice
it,
stuff.
Bertrand. How dare them put some thought into that performance? How dare they try to artistically entertain us? What do you guys got on the show today?
Well, you cover the Oscars, so we've still got a couple Super Bowl stories that nobody's talking about anymore, so we'll cover those.
Sounds good. Have a good show.